White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz, CEO and founder of Urban Prep High School, Tim King, and Chicago restaurateur, Alpada Singh. And now here's your host, a man who can't figure out how to burn a CD, Justin Kaufman.
It's true. A year ago, I'm like, oh, I'll burn that CD for you. I need to burn a CD, and I'm like, I don't even know where to start. Don't even know where to start. It's funny. I mean, I guess that's the way technology works. I'm a little annoyed with my son's school only because my son got into the talent show. And he's going to sing a song, and we have a sort of a karaoke version of the song, right? And they said to be a part of it, he needs to put it on. It needs to be available on CD. I'm like, you don't have somebody who's got a laptop up who can press play? I mean, it's all Apple Music and streaming now.
Right.
So where am I going to – I'm like, oh, I guess I'll burn a CD. And I'm like, I don't even – like that whole process is
– when the school budget really hits home to me. Well, it's technology based.
You know what the best part is? The school's a technology school too.
Oh,
so it's always like what? I'm gonna burn the CD and I'm gonna give it to you, and then you're gonna press play, and it's gonna do the old printout where it's like I cannot read, and I'll be like, I don't know, just shout it out. Can't wait. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman here with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Very exciting show lined up. Alpada Singh's going to join us, the restaurateur and former host of Check Please. She's going to be the honorary chair and MC of the benefit for the opening doors for Deborah's Place. Deborah's Place is a foundation that helps homeless women find housing. So we'll talk with Alpada Singh. She was probably out and about last night at James Beard Awards. She's got all her restaurants, Boarding House, Seven Lions, Terra and Vine in Evanston, which you just went to, Pete, as well. So did you like it?
Delicious.
Yeah. Would that be your choice on a Check Please?
Ma'am.
Yes. What would be your choice on a Check Please?
I used to say it was going to be Dusix for a while.
Yeah.
But I think that's been on... I think right now I would go with Terra and Vine in Evanston, Illinois.
And we go out, and Pete Zimmerman says, for a good time, I would do Outback Steakhouse. I've said that before, but that would be the greatest.
As long as I get on the opening credits, yeah. I'll do anything they want me to be, or any restaurant they want.
Oh, yeah. It had to be the Outback Steakhouse on Tui. Out in Niles. That's the only one. It can't just be anyone. It's got to be that one. And all the packages is not necessarily showing the food. It's just how you maneuver to get a bar seat, you know, because they'll have the list. It's like it's an hour wait on a Saturday, but if you go stalk the bar, you can get two at the bar and you can eat there. That would be my whole thing. That's how you can do it. I wouldn't even care. They'd like, how's the food? It doesn't matter. Here's the fun part. I'd explain how you stalk the bar.
So would you go again to the Outback Steakhouse? Well, if I was on Tui, I would go to that Outback.
A lot of competition on Tui over there, you know, in the Niles area. Also tonight, Urban Prep Academy's Tim King, CEO and founder, boasts an eighth year of 100% admission to colleges, four-year colleges for his students, his seniors. We'll talk to him about the secrets of success at Urban Prep, as well as what he thinks about some of the educational movements we've had here in our country in the last couple of years. I mean, because it's amazing. I was reading up on Urban Prep. They do so much about culture and community. And there's really something I never thought about when it comes to school. They go really deep on creating positive culture for their all-male students, African-American all-male students on the Chicago South Side. And that's really where they feel like that they can make a difference is creating the culture, making a positive culture for school. Let's talk. I enjoy talking about that. Also tonight, Chris Getz is going to be here, the director of player development for the Chicago White Sox. We'll talk with him about what to expect from the guys in the pipeline, especially in Charlotte. Follow the Charlotte Knights on Twitter. Michael Kopech is not there, but most of the ready, you know, prime time acquired prospects for the Chicago White Sox are in Charlotte. So we'll talk. And Yoan Moncada, who's the number one prospect in baseball, had a huge April. You know, we'll put Chris on the hot seat. Will we see Yoan Moncada? If the Sox are in it and they're a game back, half game back, and we're getting into late May, June, do you see the number one prospect in baseball come up?
Who's the second baseman currently?
Tyler Saladino.
He's good, right?
He's serviceable. I don't know if he's top prospect in baseball, but, you know, he's got a better mustache than Yoan Moncada, that's for sure. And also, we'll play the worst tonight. Solly Santos and Alexander Sarpalis will be here to play the worst, 312-981-7200. All right, news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martyr. And I believe Esmeralda, is she back tonight? I don't know. Roger was in last night. I said Esmeralda, but Roger Badish was in. Esmeralda or Roger. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, let's do the carryout, shall we? Here are today's top stories. Hillary Clinton says she does take personal responsibility for losing her bid for president. I guess up to this point, she's been blaming others, getting crazy angry, frothing at the mouth, throwing chairs, breaking windows. Oh, wait, it's not the campaign anymore? We don't have to make that stuff up? No. Can she walk yet? Is she past being too sick to lead? Oh, sorry. Wait, again? Hillary Clinton shouldn't take the blame for losing. How about we blame Donald Trump for winning? Democrats and liberals continue to act that anyone but Hillary could have beaten Trump. Is it possible that right there, that might be that arrogance that Donald Trump and his supporters are talking about? I'm just wondering aloud. Anyway, she said if the election took place on October 27th, she would have won. This, of course, was before the FBI said they were reinvestigating her emails. That's like saying if the Super Bowl was just one half, we'd all be doing the Dirty Bird. Or better yet, it'd be like NASCAR. Yeah, you could be winning by the 40th lap, but you better get your tires checked, because let's face it, this is what happened to Hillary. She had a big lead, but she never took a pit stop. Boom! The final 20, she blew a tire, spun out into the yard. Now she wants to push and shove in the garage? Nah, we ain't having it. Did I get that right? Did I get that NASCAR? I kind of got that right? The USDA is rolling back nutrition guidelines in school cafeterias. The school cafeteria lobby, there really is a lobby for everything, argued that the food served under those guidelines was unpopular. And now they have the flexibility to give students what they want. So am I reading this right? The USDA wants to change school lunch nutrition because kids don't like to eat healthy? So essentially they're the cool dad after a divorce? Hey, I know your mom, Obama, wants you to eat right, but don't tell her. Here's some Cocoa Puffs and a beer. Who's your favorite? And then in a related story, the FDA is halting requirements for restaurants to list calorie counts on menus. Why? The lobby, yep, there's a calorie lobby, says it's restrictive and hard for restaurants to comply. They just don't know how many calories are in anything. So is it that, or do restaurants not want to list calories because if we knew how many were in there, we'd stop eating the mocha double caramel coconut heavy cream macchiatos? So let me see if I got this right. Big corporations make money off of making people sick, fat, and stupid. And then the Trump administration says that in itself is a moneymaker, and that's capitalism, and government should just get out of the way. And because of those lax regulations, corporations can now make loads of money. And that means they can invest in jobs, and that trickles down to your pocket. So now you guessed it, you got the money to buy a mocha double caramel coconut heavy cream macchiato. Right? And the worst part, when you get diabetes, the government doesn't want to help you with healthcare. I think I got it. Today, this is a weird story. Today, an FBI translator went to Syria. This didn't happen today. This story came out. I don't know why it came out today, but an FBI translator went to Syria to marry the man she was investigating. He's a German man who became an ISIS leader. And then she realized the error of her ways and came back and turned herself in. This story comes to us just in time for Hollywood writers who averted a writer's strike. Boom, get back to work. I see a Sarah Jessica Parker Matthew McConaughey vehicle here. Sold, greenlit, it practically writes itself. Get to work, the strike's over. Right? I want that on my desk. I want a 150-page treatment on my desk by Tuesday. Next Tuesday. A new jobs report says that summer internships at big companies like Facebook, Google, or Bank of America pay better than the U.S. median for full-time jobs. When hearing this news, the interns were like, wait, do I have to wear pants? Also, what's with Fridays? Is that optional? Friday? Do I have to wear pants on Friday? United CEO Oscar Munoz was grilled by Congress today. Yeah, but was he dragged out against his will? Did a congressional page bust his nose open? No? Nah, not interested. Today's the 20th anniversary of Austin Powers and the 19th year of your one friend saying, oh, behave. In weather, is it safe to come out now? Is the rain gone? Oh, I don't want to melt. Now the fun part where our area rivers crest. You never want to hear crest. Ugh. Also, overnight lows will hit freezing in some areas. Great, just when I flipped a switch from heat to air, right? This means, do I have to go get four seasons to come out and do another checkup when I switch it back? Also, gardeners, beware. It's the worst time for frost right now. I swear, if this weather messes up year two of my hydrangea, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it. You know how much trouble I had with year one of that hydrangea? Messes up year two. That's it. In sports, the Cubs and the Sox welcome May with a whimper. Both blown out last night. The Cubs have lost four of their last five, which, if this were 2014, would be encouraging. But it's not. It's 2017. And I say now is the time to trade for Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and Clayton Kershaw. Now. The White Sox welcome back Avi Garcia, who missed a game from injury, and they sent Jacob May to AAA. That was short-lived. After the Charlie Tilson injury, the Sox gave center fielder Jacob May the chance to win, and he promptly hit 0-56 in that role. To quote Hawk, he gone. Tonight will also mark the second time the Sox have employed their historic all-Garcia outfield. Willie, Lurie, and Avi. I smell a T-shirt. Let's see. We could play off Garcia. Maybe a Jerry Garcia, Grateful Dead T-shirt. Touch of gray uniforms. Boom! Nailed it. I want 20% on that. Baltimore center fielder Adam Jones says he was racially taunted while the Orioles played the Red Sox at Fenway. A fan even threw peanuts at him, which I'm not sure is a racist thing, just an ass thing. Non-racists throw stuff too. But it was enough to get the governor of Massachusetts to scold Red Sox fans on Twitter. Leave it up to a couple knucklehead fans to get the politicians involved. The other story out of Boston is, I guess the World Series trophy was broken while in Boston over the weekend. It's unclear who broke it and the extent of the injury, but it was on display at a party and it got passed around and someone broke it. Always good to break the first World Series trophy the Cubs have won in 108 years. Was it Cubs fans or was it Boston fans who were jealous? Or maybe it was a Red Sox fan infiltrating Cub fans. Like the German soldiers who pretended they were GIs in World War II. Similar like that. Let me grab this. I'd like to hold the trophy too. Go Cubs. I'd love it. Oh, look what I did. Oh, yeah. The Bears today picked up an offensive lineman and continued to defend taking Mitch Trubisky in the draft. Meh. All right. And finally tonight, a new study says that Chicago ranks number three when it comes to mosquitoes. Hey, I bet we'd be number two if we annex some of the suburbs. I'm just saying. It'd be time to take back our rightful place in mosquito rankings. Also, Orkin, who did the study, says it's not enough to wear long-sleeve clothing because the mosquitoes can bite through said clothing. Again, any Hollywood writers listening out there, all you got to do is take the plot from Piranha and instead of a lake, make it mosquitoes at a campsite. Boom! I am winning Emmys tonight for you guys. You're welcome. That's the carryout for May 2nd, 2017. Hey, it's going to get frosty tonight, so you might as well order a frosty. It's kismet. All right, coming up, we'll talk White Sox baseball, what to make of the prospects in their first month in Charlotte. Chris Getz, former second baseman now, the director of player development for the Sox, will join us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, some of the callers calling in have told me you need a CDRW optical drive. Otherwise, you need software to burn it. Thank you for that. 630 says, just tell me the song name and I'll get you the CD.
That'd be a better way to go. That first thing sounded really complicated.
It's just so funny that that technology is where we were going, and then they just there's no need for CDs anymore. What am I playing a CD for? Just plug the into the system through your laptop, right?
I'm sitting on currently sitting on about 300,000 CDs in my basement right now, and I hear that from my wife. There is no need for CDs anymore.
She's right. She nailed it.
Yeah, she is.
Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Get a couple things off my chest tonight.
Okay, good.
As some know, I'm up here on the seventh floor where the newsroom is located. I'm surrounded by a lot of monitors and TV screens and whatnot. On one of them, I happen to have Shark Tank on.
Oh, yeah.
And they were showing a woman, I think she was hawking or trying to market some sort of baby Bjorn for your toy dog. So a real dog in the toy dog category at the Westminster Dog Show. She was trying to push this baby Bjorn-style carrier. It's a dog, people. Get it a leash.
That's the worst.
And then I heard you say, and I found this kind of interesting, that the World Series trophy was damaged.
It was,
Did one of those flimsy little flags fall off it or something like that?
Yeah, something like, probably.
See,
I don't even know what it was.
Look, the NHL, of course, I'm a huge hockey fan, as you know.
Yep.
They have a very hardy, very robust trophy. That thing has been at the bottom of people's pools, for God's sakes. You can't even, Major League Baseball, these guys are supposed to be so, you can't even have a tough trophy? Come on!
You're geared up for the worst tonight.
I'm all geeked up
about
that.
I love it.
I'm telling you.
I love it.
Got to have a strong trophy.
You got to have a strong trophy.
I mean, these guys, you know, they're like kids. They're like eighth graders. Got to know what you're getting into.
Oh, that's good stuff. Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago's proud of you. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. One of the surprising storylines in Chicago sports has to be the strong start of the Chicago White Sox. The Sox are currently a game above 500 in a year that we expected a rebuild. This bodes well for the future of the franchise as Sox fans are watching two teams right now, the Major League Club, of course, and the Charlotte Knights, the Sox AAA team. That's because prospects like Yoan Moncada, Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, and Zach Birdie are on that squad, and those players are poised to be the future of the White Sox. Joining me on the line tonight is a guy who's in charge of player development for the White Sox, former second baseman Chris Getz. Chris, welcome to the Download.
Well, thanks for having me, Justin. I'm excited to be on here with you.
All offseason, we heard about, you know, restocking the farm system, about the prospects that might come up. You know, this has been a pleasant surprise that the ball club at the major league level is performing well. Does that change anything from the White Sox perspective when you talk about all the prospects you have in the system?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, us having success early on here at the major league level, that's just a testament, obviously, to the players going out there performing well and Rick Renteria and his staff and what they've been able to accomplish. And speaking for the minor league system, you know, we're still down there working every day trying to get our guys ready. So when they're called upon, those guys are the best position to have some success. And fortunately that they're off, a handful of them are off to very good starts and could be at the major league level before you know it.
Yeah. I mean, how does that work? Explain that to us. Cause I never really understand the concept of whether or not a player is ready or not ready. Do you deem them, do you go to the White Sox general manager, Rick Hahn, or to Rick Renteria and say, Yoan's ready. He's ready to go. Or is there a need for that player and you guys have the discussion after that?
You know, it's case to case. Sometimes, you know, it's the only available position is potentially at second base. There could be an injury or something like that. But where we're at right now with things and the focus of fully developing these guys or take them as close as we can to where they need to be, you know, it's just ongoing conversations. It really is. Obviously, a lot of people, there's a lot of focus on some of the guys that we have in the minor leagues right now. So, you know, we're checking in on a daily basis with Rick and Buddy Bell and the rest of the front office there, letting them know how guys are progressing, you know. So these players will let us know when they're ready. They really will. And that's really it. You know, you want them to be as well-rounded and prepared as possible so when they get up there, you know, they can go out there and have some success. I mean, we've got guys that have a lot of skill, have some high ceilings, and we just want to get them close to that ceiling. That's our job.
Yeah. You know, for you as a former player who has, you know, had success at the major league level, talk about what the minor leagues mean to you. You know, as someone who's now in charge, director of player development, what does a minor league stint or development in the minor leagues mean to someone who not only is now in charge but used to be a player?
Well, you know, you get these players, you know, from the draft or international signings, and obviously you got rookie ball, and you work your way up to the major leagues, and at each stop, the competition gets better and better. And obviously, at the major league level, we're looking at the best players in the world, meaning that they're highly, highly skilled. So we've got players that come in, you know, their tools are identified through the scouting process, and it's our job to refine those tools and really just maximize their ability. So by the time they get to the major leagues, they can go out there and use those tools. I mean, these are gifted athletes, but, you know, it's a very difficult game at the top, and it's the type pyramid, very competitive. So it's our job to just prepare them the best that we can. And we've got a very experienced staff that we all kind of we collaborate, we work together, and try to get the best out of these guys.
I think of some of the players that have already had a taste of the major leagues, and I think of Lucas Giolito or Moncada last year with the Red Sox. Is it tougher or is it more difficult to keep them focused on AAA when they've already been to the bigs? Maybe they've had some success. Is it tougher to keep them sort of with the eye on the prize if they're back to where they started?
It can be. Sometimes that is the case, but you know, a lot of those guys, or a handful of those guys that have been in the big leagues, I think it was a great experience for them, and it was a learning experience. Some of them did take some bumps and bruises along the way, and you know, took that experience. And now being in AAA, they're working on some other things, so when they get back up there, they can be off and running and improve in those areas.
We're talking with Chris Getz. He's the director of player development for the Chicago White Sox. Let's talk specifically about some of the players that are in the system. Of course, the number one prospect in baseball and the minor league player of the month for the Chicago White Sox, Yoan Moncada. Talk about him. Talk about the season he's having, and also whether or not we're going to see him up at the major league level this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, Yoan's done a tremendous job. He's off to a very nice start. You know, he's a very good athlete. He can impact the game in a lot of different ways. You know, just speaking about the bat, obviously he's a switch hitter. Got power from both sides. Can move the ball around. I mean, he can truly change the game. And then he gets on the base pass, and he's got, you know, the skill set to steal some bases and put some pressure on the defense there. Defensively, he's been very good. A lot of people ask about his defense, and from what I've seen from day one to where he is now, he's gotten better. He's working every day. He's getting good on his footwork, his angles, his double plays. Our staff in Charlotte, they've done a very nice job working with him, and he's coming. So he's a guy that, you know, he's got worlds of talent, and, you know, I think he is on his way. Now, to say that when he's going to be there in Chicago, when he's going to be here, I can't really tell you that because we don't know. But I can say that he is getting closer.
Let's talk about some of the arms. I mean, we've heard about names like Lucas Giolito or Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, Zach Birdie, I mentioned. Carson Fulmer is another one. I mean, there are a lot of arms that have been assembled in Charlotte. How are they progressing as a pitching unit, and who should we be paying attention to?
You know, they're all doing really well. You know, start with Ronaldo Lopez. He's got a lot of arm strength. He's got a curveball and a slider and a changeup. He's athletic. He likes to compete. You know, so he's progressing well. He has a lot of fun out there. I know he's a good teammate, but he's got some weapons, and he's got a chance to develop into a frontline type starter. And he's on his way. Carson Fulmer, he's off to a good start as well. I know last year, in his first full season, you know, there were some learning experiences, got to the major leagues, and this year he's refined something in his delivery. His command has improved. He's pitching tonight, but he's a guy that, you know, is a tremendous competitor, very smart kid. The makeup is just very strong, and he's coming along. And Giolito, he's coming along as well. I mean, he's got some weapons. He's got a mid-90s fastball, good curveball, changeup. He's working on a slider. He's gotten better every outing. He hasn't completely put it all together. One night his fastball command will be very good, and then the next night his curveball will be his best pitch. And he just hasn't put it all together, but it's definitely coming, and we're excited about what Lucas brings to the table.
I mean, when you talk about that, I mean, how important is it that you have a string of dominant performances from a prospect before you bring them up to a major league level? Can Lucas Giolito have off nights and still be on a fast track to the majors?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are going to have off nights. I mean, there's some pretty good lineups to AAA. Obviously, it's not the major league level, but, you know, mistakes are going to be hit. There's going to be some guys that are able to run into a home run here and there, and so that it can skew the numbers. But, you know, yeah, I mean, we want these guys to put a string of we want them to have quality starts every time they go out there, but we also understand that that sometimes isn't going to happen. But, yeah, we want a solid foundation so when they get up here, they're as confident as possible.
You know, I think about when you talk about the minor league system, how do you determine who's ready for a triple-A or a double-A or a single-A for that matter? I mean, because there are a lot of prospects that, you know, might be in double-A right now or in, and not on the Charlotte Knights. Talk about that. Talk about, and your job as director of development, how do you determine where a prospect is at?
It's constant conversations with your staff. You know, for Dane Dunning, for example, he's a guy in Kannapolis, and the guy was going out there, and he was, every start that he had, he was more or less dominant, to be honest. So those numbers will dictate a lot, but then some of the conversation, how's his day-to-day work? How is he holding runners, fielding his position? How quick is he to the plate? How's his command of his fastballs, curveballs, slider? You know, things that he's going to have to do as, you know, he moves up the level. So, and he was a guy that went out there and had a string of very, very good starts, like I said. And so that was an easy one. We just wanted to get him to Winston-Salem as soon as we could, and we did that. So it's really, you know, it's not a perfect science. It really isn't. It's just conversations with the staff. You look at the performance along with some fundamental little things, and you incorporate all those different things and come up with a decision.
You know, you mentioned the AAA competition being stiff. You know, it's interesting, too, because that's going to be where you're going to see injured players, players who are coming off the disabled list, who are rehabbing, are down in the minors for a stint before they come up. That's invaluable for some of the young arms for the White Sox to face major league players who might be coming back to the majors. It's just a matter of time. They're just, you know, getting their timing ready, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of – it's one of the great things about being AAA, too. I mean, you get – obviously the competition's – greater, but you, like you said, I mean, you get guys rehabbing. So the more these guys are exposed to quality competition, the better they're going to be when they get to the major leagues. It's pretty straightforward like that. So, you know, once in a while you get a guy down there rehabbing who it's a major league hitter. I mean, so these guys facing those guys, they saw a lot of those guys in spring training. So to be able to get a handful of those guys down in the minor leagues is certainly helpful.
Chris Guest is my guest. He's the Director of Player Development for the Chicago White Sox. Before we let you go, you spent time in the major leagues. You were a minor league player. What's special about minor league baseball from your vantage point as someone who is now in charge, but, you know, it had a time where you had to be as well in the minor leagues?
It's a unique experience. It really is. I mean, the camaraderie that can be built from a lot of these guys, and it's, you know, we're fortunate as we're rebuilding here and we're building up our minor league system, a lot of these guys can be together and go to affiliate, you know, and some of these towns where some of these affiliates are, I think they're just unique parts of the country. You get exposed to different cultures. Obviously we've got players from all different walks of life, but to experience these different places, it just helps these guys be well-rounded. And I know looking back, I really enjoyed being in some of the towns. And then on top of that, obviously going out there and competing against the best.
Chris Guest, Director of Player Development for the Chicago White Sox, oversees the minor league system. Thanks for taking some time out to talk to us. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me.
As we talk about the White Sox, they are taking it to the Royals in Kansas City with a 2-0 lead in the third. Also, on the other side, it's funny to think about who's not here anymore. Chris Sale mowing down the Orioles. 8 strikeouts, 7 innings. And they gave him a little bit of run support. He's winning right now 3-2.
You mentioned in the carryout, you know, the controversy going on in Boston about the fans racially taunting Adam
Jones,
yeah, and I just read coming across Twitter that the fans gave him a standing ovation when he came to bat.
Drown it out.
Yeah,
I told the story one time. I mean, I hate to say it because you never want to say that one fan represents all, but mm-hmm. I mean there's trouble on the north side of Chicago.
Yeah.
I think of Milton Bradley and Jock Jones. Remember those
sure.
days?
Yeah.
Both those players mm-hmm. came out and said things were said to them in the outfield. Oh, LaTroy Hawkins.
Yeah.
Another player, and you're just like, eek, and then you're like, and you think about, I mean, so I'm glad that they at least did that. Because you're right. I mean, it becomes a national story when it hits the stuff, and it makes it seem like all Boston Red Sox fans are racially taunting a player. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's also so old. You could be so much more creative with your taunts than race-based.
Exactly.
I don't like that.
I did some good taunting about Bobby Howery when he was on the Cubs for a while.
I like, you know me, we've talked about this before. My taunts are very rooted in an old, like a 40s baseball. You know, you're a bum. Bum's a great word.
Yeah, that's an evergreen. That's never going to go away.
It feels so good to say, too.
Yeah.
Adam Jones, you're a bum, right?
Get the piano off your back.
Yes.
You're a bum. You'll always be a bum. Look at what I did there. No racial taunt, nothing in there.
And it still stings,
still
I'm sure.
Stings. A little soul tear driven going on Adam Jones's cheek. Yeah, so I'm glad that happened at least. So coming up, we're going to talk with Tim King. We're going to talk about Urban Prep. Academies, the network of three charter school high schools on the south side that they're for the eighth year straight have 100% rate of college acceptance admission. So we're going to talk with him about that because diving deep into they really do a lot at the school when it comes to culture, making sure there's a positive culture and community. So we're going to talk about that coming up and essentially trying to get to the bottom of, you know, what is the secrets of success of trying to get kids ready for post-high school work and the graduation rate among Chicago public schools and African-American kids is really low. And it has been. So we'll talk with Tim King, who really, you know, started the Urban Prep for that reason, to bring that number up. And he's succeeding with his all-male schools on the south side. So we'll talk about that coming up at 8 o'clock. Alpana Singh comes in at 9 o'clock. Talk to her about her career. We've had her on the shows plenty of times, and we'll talk to her about that. And we'll play The Worst as well coming up at 10 o'clock. All right, that's all coming up here. Thanks, Rob. The download here on 720 WGN. Tonight, we play The Worst a little bit later, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Two great comedians, Alexander Sarpalis and Soli Santos, both from the Cates Ensemble, which you can see all over town, including the Laugh Factory and other places, will join us tonight. Also, restaurateur and owner Alpana Singh, television personality, master sommelier, will be in studio as well. Always great when Alpana stops by, so we will talk with her coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. She's got a big event coming up next weekend. It's a fundraiser for Deborah's Place, which deals with women homelessness. So we'll talk with Alpana Singh about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, this week, Urban Prep Academies, a network of three Southside charter schools, announced that this year's graduating seniors have all been admitted to colleges and universities, 100%. And what's amazing is that this marks the eighth year that this has happened at Urban Prep. And actually, it started with the first graduating class. Urban Prep has three campuses in Chicago, Inglewood, Bronzeville, and University Village. Its student body is all male, all African American. Tim King is the CEO and founder of the high school network. Before founding Urban Prep, he was the president at Hales Franciscan High School, where he had similar college admission numbers. King went to high school here in Chicago at St. Ignatius. He's been awarded all over the country for his work in arming his students with tools to succeed. And what's the secret to that success? Well, Tim King is my guest at the big table tonight. Tim, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
100%. This is the eighth year in a row. Talk about that, because it's one thing to send out a press release and get in the news to say, hey, we did it. But this, I mean, this is a mantra. This is a creed. This is something that is part of the curriculum and the movement of Urban Prep.
Yes, certainly it is. Having 100% college acceptance for our seniors and our graduates is something that we're really proud of, something we've been doing since our first graduating class, and now it really has become a part of the esprit de corps of Urban Prep, what Urban Prep is all about and what Urban Prep means. It's what students expect when they come to Urban Prep, what their parents expect. It's what our teachers expect, and it puts a big, big burden on our college counselors,
right,
who, you know, they certainly refuse to be the college counselor that doesn't get that one student into college. So it's very positive pressure on all people involved.
Well, I mean, it's something to be said about the idea of it not only just being a goal, But, I mean, it is just ingrained in the school. And you mentioned it, talking to the parents, when even when they start freshman year, this is – you want to get there. I mean, you even have, you know, special awards and you know, different colored ties. I mean, there's everything that goes into the idea of this being the centerpiece of what you do.
Right. It's an expectation for our students, and it is a reason why they come to Urban Prep. Every morning we start our school day with something we call community. It's an all-school assembly at our three campuses, and our students all get in the gym. And at the end of community, we recite the Urban Prep Creed. And the third line of the creed is, "We are college bound." I think that words have power. And if you are saying that every morning for 4 years, it's going to sink in, and you're going to really believe that it is something that is possible for you, and it's something that you're going to be able to do. And then we have a bunch of other things built into, I mean, aside from our curriculum, which is really focused on preparing students to be able to succeed in college, we also have a lot of things culturally within our school that we do that support and promote college enrollment and this notion of going to college.
You know, there's something to be said about you know, as an educator, as someone who's been in this, and we talked about even before this at Hales Franciscan and just your work in schools, you know, at what point did you realize that you would need a creed or you would need a motto or you know, that this works, that the concept of ingraining in a young man's mind that he is going to college no matter what is a successful practice?
I think I always knew it. You know, I'm not a trained educator. I grew up here in Chicago and went off to college at Georgetown University for undergrad and Georgetown for law school, and didn't have the expectation that I'd go into education. While I was in law school, I started teaching part-time. So I taught during the day and would go to law school at night. And it really became clear to me that this was the pathway for people to be successful, for young people to be successful. And I came back to Chicago, again, not really intending to remain in education, but I saw the need. And I know from my own life that, you know, the opportunities that I have had have a lot to do with having great parents who were able to provide for me and who were able to make choices about my education and my future and ingrain in me, by their example and also by their words and actions, how important education is. And I just wanted to pass that on to others.
You know, it's a lot in reading about your story. I mean, a lot was focusing on the idea that there, you know, maybe you could say that the urban education model in this country or just in the city is broken in the way that we've seen graduation rates decline. We've seen students drop out of high school. Chicago Public Schools continues to have problems. What was it about the, you know, about the urban education model that drew you in? What was it about, you know, creating a campus or at the time just the one school that would essentially cater to African-American kids on the south side of Chicago?
Yeah, well, it was really necessity is the mother of invention. In Chicago, and many people I don't think realize this, but in Chicago, we've got about... if you are an African-American male and you start out in Chicago Public Schools, you only have about a 6% chance of earning a college degree by the time you're 25 or 26 years old. That's ridiculous. And then if you look at the rates of dropouts in the city, the highest demographic that has the highest dropout rate, hovering sometimes as high as 60%, are African-American boys. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the violence that we're seeing in our city, the victims of the violence more often than not are young black males. So if you look at this, you really can understand that there's a crisis, there's a problem. And I said, you know, and it wasn't just me. It was, you know, a group of, I mean, I've got some great folks involved in Urban Prep. And, you know, we said, there's an issue, there's a problem. Let's figure out a solution. And here was a way we thought we could affect some positive change. And I'm happy to say that we've done so.
Now, you know, the criticism of the model is that, you know, you will say that there is 100% graduation rate, you know, that acceptance.
Well, let's be clear.
Let me be clear. I was wrong here.
Good.
But the 100% admission to colleges.
Yep.
But the four-year rate of keeping kids in 4 years is a different number. That you have the same similar issues that Chicago Public Schools has in keeping kids enrolled and keeping them from dropping out.
So you are correct that there's a significant difference between college acceptance and high school completion. There's also a big difference between dropping out of high school and transferring from schools. So at Urban Prep, probably about a third of the students from freshman to senior year will leave the school. A very, 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 very small percentage of those students are actually expelled from schools, from our schools. And a very small percentage, it's almost zero, actually drop out. What happens is they'll leave Urban Prep and they'll go to another
school. And then they drop out from the school.
And they may or may not you know, finish at the other school. So you're not really comparing apples to apples when you say that, you know, we've got, you know, that, you know, what about all the students that leave? That's just, you know, as
but
bad
that,
as,
I mean, that whenever you know. See the success story, yeah. there will always be a secondary story that says, well, you know, they're cooking the books.
You know, it's interesting to me because I will tell you, it is a point of frustration for me. Not because it is a criticism of Urban Prep or of me, but frankly, it is a criticism of our children, of our kids, of our students, and their accomplishment. It is not relevant to the fact that, you know, one of our students got admitted to 41 colleges and universities. To have someone, it's not relevant for that person to, for someone to say, yeah, but, you know, right. this guy who started with you didn't finish high school. That's not the point. The point is that this young man, these young men, 230 black males, 85% low income, have managed to stay the course and earn their place on a college campus. And that really is what's important. And, you know, I'll often just kind of, you know, bottom line and say, you know, haters are going to hate, right? I mean, they're folks that are going to be critical no matter what you do.
Tim King is the CEO and founder of the Urban Prep Academies and Network's three campuses in Chicago, high schools in Inglewood, Bronzeville, and in University Village. When we come back, let's talk about the rules. I really enjoyed sort of delving into respect, responsibility, ritual, and relationships. And that's really
You've done your homework.
That's the base of what Urban Prep is all about. So let's talk about that and how that works at the high school level. We're talking with Tim King here on The Download. Stay with us. We're talking high school education here on The Download tonight. Tim King, the CEO and founder of Urban Prep Academies, three campuses in Chicago, charter schools, high schools, in Inglewood, Bronzeville, and University Village. We're talking about, you know, this is just in the paper this week, just about this is the eighth year straight that they've had 100% of their graduating seniors accepted to college. And that's something, that's part of the creed, that's part of the culture, the positive culture that Tim and his teachers and administrators are trying to accomplish at Urban Prep. And I mentioned right before the break that it really, you sort of break the whole concept down. What you're trying to accomplish with sort of, you know, developing young black men
yep.
at Urban Prep is this idea of respect, responsibility, ritual, and relationships. Tell us about this.
Sure. So what you've just described are the four pillars of a positive school culture. The Urban Prep school culture: respect, responsibility, ritual, and relationship. So for us, you know, we want to create this environment which has a uniquely Urban Prep culture. And so we devised this culture. You know, you hear about the, you know, three R's: reading, writing, arithmetic.
Yeah, right,
we have our
right.
four R's: respect, responsibility, ritual, and relationship. So respect is all about instilling in our students a sense of self-respect. We want them to respect themselves. We want them to respect other people. So our young men are referred to with the honorific Mr. and their last name. So we don't call our students Joe, Tom, Frank. It's Mr. Smith, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Jones, because we want, as the adults, to show this level of respect to them so that they start thinking about themselves a little differently. And it is empowering. We've got respect, responsibility. We've got a student code of conduct that all of our students are expected to mm-hmm. follow. We want them to be responsible, and not just responsible inside the school, but we hope that they can be responsible citizens outside.
Representatives.
Representatives, ambassadors, right outside the school. My favorite is ritual in those four R's. There's an African proverb, if you want the dance to change, you've got to change the music. So for us, you know, we change the music by having these uniquely urban prep experiences and rituals. I mentioned earlier the community that we have, the all-school assembly, the urban prep creed that the students recite. One of the rituals that's particularly relevant to this recent 100% announcement is that when a senior is admitted to college, we call him up in front of all of his classmates, the entire school, and we announce that he's been admitted to a college and announce the name of the college he's been admitted to, and then we exchange his red uniform tie for a red and gold striped uniform tie.
Right.
That is a ritual that is urban prep. That man is just is transformational with our students. I mean, from the time they're freshmen, they want to get that tie. You know, when they're seniors, they're, you know, mad at their their brothers because, you know, they haven't gotten their tie. Man, what's taking so long to get your tie? So it's a real thing that they're looking for. And the last one is relationships. We got to foster these positive relationships because these students, these young men, they need examples, they need mentors, they need role models, they need guidance so that they can traverse what is going to be a
tough. Do you think you have more success with the students at Urban Prep because it's all one gender? The idea that it's all male. I mean, talk about that. Talk about the idea of how you're seeing success from your students with just one gender.
Sure. I am not an advocate of an answer to any issue or, you know, that there is a single answer. There's one answer to any issue or problem facing society. And so when it comes to education, there isn't a single answer. I happen to think that single gender education can be really effective for some students. I would never advocate single gender education for every single student. I didn't go to an all-boys school. My brother happened to go to an all-boys school. We went to the schools that were the right schools for us at the time. I think that families should have those options and those choices. Keep in mind that the city of Chicago, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of public school students in the city of Chicago. Urban Prep educates 1,000 students. So, you know, it's a very small sliver of the overall population. And I think that there are benefits. It allows us to focus on, you know, things that we know are particularly relevant to this particular population. But more important, it allows a family to make a decision on what they want for their son.
You know, the other part too is just about fighting a societal stigma about young black men.
Yeah.
This concept that, you know, the Southside black kid who's what, 16 years old, is in no good, is in trouble, he's going to drop out of school, and he's headed for a life of crime.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about the rituals part of this, the relationships part of what you're doing, the idea that an all male school, it changes the narrative. And it plays on that narrative in the way that you can build successful relationships with the kids with, you know, in the face of that.
Yeah, I agree. We are successful in educating our young men and successful in getting students to, you know, to college. But I think we've also been successful in, as you said, changing this narrative of what society thinks is possible for this particular population. I don't think that everyone, and time will tell, but I don't think everyone fully understands or appreciates, even I don't understand or appreciate, what having a school that is a public school with low-income kids who are black, who are male, who are from Chicago, and all of them every year keep getting into college, what that actually does to a city and to a country in terms of perception and in terms of what they are going to think of when they see a young black man, as opposed to what they have been thinking or what they have been taught.
Tim King's the CEO and founder of the Urban Prep Academies, three campuses in Chicago. They've got the Bronzeville, Inglewood, and University Village. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. I'd love to talk more, you know, just about the challenges of putting a school like this together. I mean, you have a lot of resource, you have a lot of resources that aren't necessarily provided at some of the Chicago public schools. I think of class sizes. I think of other things. But there's also the same challenges that go with educating kids in high sort of poverty, you know, high crime areas. So we'll talk more about that coming up after the news. Tim King, my guest at the big table tonight. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, my guest in studio, Tim King. He is the CEO and founder of Urban Prep Academies. Three campuses here in Chicago, the Charter School High School Network, in Inglewood, Bronzeville, and University Village. This week, the big story, the eighth straight year of 100% admission for graduating seniors to colleges and universities. You know, when I was looking at the stuff and getting ready today, when you hit the news tab on Google for Urban Prep, you get a police blotter.
Yeah.
A lot of kids who unfortunately are victims of gun violence. You know, you are either on the record or teachers are on the record. And there's a lot that goes into, you know, even though there's a successful school, charter school network, and there still is the environment around the school, and a lot of the kids succumb to that violence. Talk about that. Talk about the contradiction of trying to do the four R's inside the walls and dealing with the complexities outside the school.
This current class, this graduating class, in fact, one of the students was shot and killed over winter break. In fact, in a 1 week period of time over winter break, two Urban Prep students were shot and killed, they were not the intended targets, and, you know, just kind of in the wrong place, wrong time. And so it's very difficult for our students. It is a part of their experience. These young men every day traverse war zones in order to get to and from school. They manage it and navigate it well. And one of the things we try to do is provide them with the social emotional support necessary for them to be able to decompress and deal with and manage that type of
experience. That's a part of what we talked about when we said urban education. I mean, how much do you have to put resources into the psychological, the mental, the counseling, things of that nature that you may not think about in some of the suburban high schools and other places around the state of Illinois?
Right. I mean, we're very committed at Urban Prep to educating the whole student. It is very important to us to be attentive to the social-emotional development of our students. And so we do have personal counselors. We do have access to external resources that we can send our parents and our students to as needed. Every one of our students is put into a small group cohort. We call them PRIDES because we're Urban Prep Lions. And they meet regularly with that group, with an adult who typically has some expertise in social work. And they can talk and figure out who they are and reach out for help when they need it. And we're there every day to make sure we're touch points for them so that they can get the support that they need. But it's a key element of what I have. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, what makes Urban Prep successful? You know, what's the secret ingredient? And there's not one thing, but certainly I think a key element is making sure that these students are supported.
Well, I mean, I just think about it. Everything that you've been talking about and giving us the imagery of the assembly at the beginning of school, the four R's, the respect, responsibility, ritual. You talked a lot about relationships. And I can understand, like, developing a community and developing trust among – I mean, I was watching somewhere the documentary you guys put together where the kids start to – because they greet in the morning, they shake hands, they start to get to know the students. So now they feel like they're going to know them, and they might have a question, or they may do things that right. another kid wouldn't. So I'd imagine that gun violence or someone being taken from that group is very, very difficult.
Well, look, it's devastating whenever a child's life is lost. And frankly, I believe it's devastating whenever anyone's life is lost. But certainly when someone's life is lost inside a community and that person was a part of that community, it's going to hurt. One of the things that we don't pay attention to, I think, as a city and as a society, is the impact that this violence actually has on the survivors. It's not just the people who get shot who are impacted. It's really the entire community. I mean, one young man, one Urban Prep student, was talking to a group of Northwestern University students recently, and he was talking about violence, and he says, I wake up in the morning hearing gunshots, and I go to sleep at night hearing gunshots. How does that impact a person's development? And I mean, another one said, you know, I don't go outside because I'm worried that if I go outside, something's going to happen. I mean, these are really different types of childhoods that these young men are having. And we should be attentive as adults to, you know, what's going on with them, to try to be helpful and support them and help them get through it.
You know, I mentioned a little bit earlier about resources. I mean, Chicago Public Schools are strapped, you know, in the way that we see, continue to see, you know, funding questions at the state and the city level, tightening as much as possible. You know, for in your case, I mean, that also affects you. As a lot of the money that comes from Chicago Public, for your budget comes from Chicago Public Schools. And then there's fundraising. But again, you mentioned it's a smaller sliver. You know, it's 1,000 students. Talk about, you know, the idea of resources. What do you have to make sure you have, whether it be small class sizes or whether it be counseling services? What needs to be there to be a successful high school in Chicago?
Look, we opened our first school in 2006, and I have never, ever experienced the challenges that we're experiencing this year. You're right on when you say, and this is something that most people don't realize, the majority of our funding, the vast majority of our funding comes from the Chicago Public Schools. We are a Chicago Public School. We are a network of Chicago Public Schools. And so when Chicago Public Schools is hurting, you know, we're hurting. And we have had some success in being able to do some extra stuff because of fundraising. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're in constant need, and it's a challenge because these extra programs, these extra supports, which we know work, which we've proven have worked, you know, we can't do them if every year our funding is getting cut as it has for the last 2 years, and fundraising isn't increasing. You know, you just can't keep it up. And so I'm worried. I'm frankly very worried about the future, mostly due to the budgetary constraints which this state and our city are facing.
I mean, it gets to a certain point, especially when you're talking about inner city schools, and you're talking about, I mean, you've had tremendous success, and you have, and it shows from fundraising. You've had Oprah Winfrey and others who have given money to Urban Prep, but just what I don't even know, a couple blocks away is Robeson High School,
yes,
which is Chicago Public Schools, and they don't have that kind of funding that comes in. I mean, you can talk from your vantage point, you know, of being a successful school in the face of dwindling resources,
yeah.
But there are a lot of schools in this city that are dwindling even more.
I think that we should recognize that if we want to stem the violence in our city, if we want to build a solid middle class, prosperous citizens, then we have to invest seriously and significantly in public education. And, you know, just as Robeson may not, for example, do fundraising like Urban Prep does, Robeson doesn't have to pay rent to be in a CPS building like Urban Prep does.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there are trade-offs and things there. But, I mean, the bottom line is whether you're Robeson, whether you're Harper, whether you're Urban Prep, whoever you are, there needs to be more money in public education in the city of Chicago. And I think the mayor gets that. I think he understands it. I wish that, you know, we could sort out a way to make sure that the money was flowing into these schools. But I do think education is the answer.
The mayor came out just and you know, it was a little bit of a head scratcher as he came out and said that he wants the model where to be able to graduate, a requirement for graduation in Chicago Public Schools is you have to show your acceptance letter to a college or university. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And what you've done at Urban Prep. Do you like that concept? I mean, to be widespread to Chicago Public Schools?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I'm going to take some credit for inspiring. I mean, the mayor hasn't said this. He hasn't said it to me, and he hasn't said it publicly, but I like to think that we inspired the mayor and the Chicago Public Schools in our example of what is possible for a group of students in this initiative. The initiative, as I understand it, is basically says you have to have a post-high school plan. So it can be a college admission letter, it can be a job offer, it can be some type of internship program. I think that's important. I'm all for it. I don't think that we should shy away from having those types of expectations and standards and requirements for our young people. I don't think we should be making students take a job or making students go to college. But certainly I think we should be making sure that all of our students have that option and opportunity to do so. I also hope that the resources are behind it in order to do it. Because like I said earlier in the show, what we do doesn't happen just because we say everyone's going to go to college. It happens because there are a lot of adults working really hard. There's a lot of counseling. There's a lot of support going on. That costs a lot of money. We've made decisions to prioritize and spend money on those types of things. I hope that this type of program more broadly across the city also comes with some dollars to make it work.
Absolutely. Tim King is the CEO and founder of Urban Prep Academies, three campuses, one in Bronzeville, Inglewood, and University Village. Again, this week, the announcement that 100% of the graduating seniors have been accepted into colleges and universities. Tim, pleasure having you here.
Thank
you. I'd love to have you come back. We'll continue the conversation about education in Chicago. Thanks a lot.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
I mean, it really does. It's an interesting topic about what it takes to properly resource a school. And it's not just about money. And I think that that's what we miss sometimes. I think it has a lot to do with focus, and it has to do with a positive culture. I mean, I watched a lot, and you can find it if you just Google around. You can find some of the – I mean, I got to watch the assembly. There's a documentary at Urban Prep about their assemblies. It's nothing like we know. You know, I don't know about you, Pete, but homeroom, I guess, was your assembly every morning, right?
Yeah, that was it.
But you didn't go to a assembly and then – have situations where the teachers would bring a student up and say, this person got accepted to college, here's a new tie.
No, we did not.
That was nothing. But it's that kind of stuff. And we even talked, I mean, even with Karen Lewis, who was in here from the Chicago Teachers Union, about at a certain point, do we have to get to a stage where we all recognize that we need to try new things when it comes to public education, especially in urban education? You know, there may be success stories out the wazoo in the state of Illinois and some of the big schools that have done well, whether it be New Trier or I think of the western suburbs like Hinsdale and Naperville and Wheaton. But those are different scenarios than what happens in downtown Chicago or even the south side of Chicago, west side of Chicago. And I think, you know, just when you think about resources and you think about not just what it takes money-wise to be able to bring the right amount of professionals in to educate your children, but about that positive environment. Because when you get outside of that school, it's a different world. To hear Tim King talk, say one of his students hears gunshots when he wakes up in the morning, gunshots when he goes to bed. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine listening right now? I mean, you hear that and you it's terrible. But could you just, I hear a gunshot and I hear it occasionally in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's an alarming thing where you're like, what's going on? Porch lights go on. You know, people want to look around, see what's happening in my neighborhood. Maybe the neighbors will get together and say, that's unacceptable. We can't have gunshots at night here in this neighborhood. I mean, I get raised voices where I live. Gets everyone's ire up.
All the lights go on. Look what's going on out there.
So it's something to think about. When you're like, you know, what do we do about the people who are literally caught in the crossfire? I mean, kids that don't want to go outside and yet... when they do go, they go to school. And if is that what happens in that school? Because that really is the battle lines for how this person is going to develop as an adult. And so I just find that fascinating if we can have conversations with people about the way we do school in this country and take politics out of it. And, you know, I don't believe, and I make it very clear, this is Democrats, Republicans, all that kind of stuff. That's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've had Republicans run things, Democrats run things, and we've had different initiatives from Washington, from different presidential administrations. And yet we still have not been able to figure out at the core some of the issues about trying to educate kids in urban environments. So how do you do it? So we'll have those conversations. I'm excited to have him. So good to have him. Yes, I recognize as well. This will blow your mind too. My first, I can't remember because it gets hazy. But when I was an intern at Columbia College in 1994. I got an internship at WBEZ, and that's where I started doing my work. Mm-hmm. So this was 23 years ago. One of the first things I worked on was getting Tim King in studio. I was working on a show called Talk of the City to talk about his new job at Hales Franciscan High School. And I think it's funny, 23 years later.
Yeah, how about that?
I also, on a totally different kick, I worked with John Dempsey. You worked with John Dempsey.
Yeah,
John
love
Dempsey,
John.
Long
great.
Time journalist here in town, great guy, does morning news now. He put up on his Facebook post a piece of audio, and this is from April 29th, 1997, the night that Mike Royko died. And he put up an audio. He had a show at that time, and I produced his show. And he collected all of his archives because otherwise it just get thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the night that Mike Royko died, and he said, Justin Kaufman and I put together this special on the night that Mike Royko died.
Wow.
And I was like, that was 20 years ago. And, I think about everything. I'm like, wow, it's crazy to think that, I was doing this, what we're doing tonight, 20 years ago, about an important, story, like the death of Mike Royko. That blew my mind. And then I put a comment on it. It was just you shouldn't even say it because it's funny, but it was the first and not the last time that John Cass yelled at me. John, a good friend of mine, John Cass, that night I called. I was what, 97? I would have been 21 years old, 22 maybe. And so when I called him, because he was tight with Royko, he was
going to be positive heir apparent.
Heir replacement, right? And I did the thing where I'm like, I'm really sorry for your loss. Excuse me, Mr. Cass. And he said to me, he's like, don't give me that sad stuff. Just put me on the air or something like that. I was like, geez, I get yelled at. Yelled at by a columnist. All right. My way.
Yeah.
So anyway, and like I said, not the last time. All right. So coming up, Alpana Singh is here. We talked to her about her big benefit she's got coming up. She's the honorary chair. I'm not sure if she's MC or she's the honorary chair for Deborah's Place. A long-standing organization here in town that takes on the issue of women homelessness. So we'll talk with Alpana Singh. And we'll also play The Worst coming up 10 o'clock with Soli Santos and Alexandra Sarpalis, both in the Cates Ensemble. So that's coming up as well here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Alexander Sarpalis and Soli Santos will be here to play The Worst, two great stand-up comedians in Chicago who are part of the Cates Ensemble, which you can see at the Bookseller or also at the Laugh Factory do shows. So they will be here. They are regulars to The Worst, 312-981-7200. We already heard Rob Martyr's The Worst. He says, it's the worst Baby Bjorn for dogs. It seems like that would be the worst. So we'll hear from you coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, my next guest is a master sommelier, a television personality, and a restaurateur. Alpana Singh is the woman behind Chicago area restaurants like The Boarding House, Seven Lions here on Michigan Avenue, and Evanston's Terra and Vine. She's the honorary chair for the upcoming Opening Doors Benefit. It's a fundraiser to help Deborah's Place, which is Chicago's oldest and largest provider of supportive housing for women experiencing homelessness. The event is on May 11th. Alpana, good to see you. Thanks for coming
there.
In.
I see you twice in one week.
I know. We saw each other in the James Beard. I was telling everyone I couldn't decide if I was gallivanting or traipsing.
Both.
I was doing both.
Gala-traipsing.
Gala-traipsing. You talk about this. This is something, obviously we know you as a restaurateur and as somebody who hosted Check Please for years. What gets you involved in doing work for places like Deborah's?
I think it's
place.
Gratitude and gratefulness. I think you get to a point in your life where you look around and, life has been good to you. And, in order to keep it, you have to give it away. And so, You know, I was looking for a charity to support, and it started with this dinner that we did at the boarding house last year, where we took two other female chefs, actually Zoe Shore, who's about to open her own restaurant, Split Rail, and Diana Davila, who just opened Mi Tocaya in Logan Square. And we wanted to support them and their endeavors, their entrepreneurial endeavors. And so we did a dinner in collaboration with Tanya Baker at the boarding house, and Julia Fitting was our pastry chef at the time. But I thought, wow, okay, so we need a charitable component here. And so I sent an email to a friend of mine, Ann Perry, who's at the U of C, and I said, I need a female-driven charity. And she said, actually, the woman who I work with is on the board at Deborah's Place. And I said, awesome. So I looked it up, and I was like, okay, this is it. And so I met with the folks from Deborah's Place, and they were so wonderful and amazing. And I was immediately taken back because they've been around for 32 years, and I'd never heard of them before. And the distinction with Deborah's Place is it was founded to serve sort of this gap. Because at the time, if you were a woman facing homelessness and you were unaccompanied, meaning you weren't, you know, you didn't have children, you had children, but you couldn't be with them, there was no place for you to go. You had to go to a co-ed shelter, which was oftentimes a lot more dangerous
for
them.
Right.
And so Deborah's Place filled that niche. And so it's not emergency housing. It's not a shelter. What they do is they help provide provide permanent housing for women. So they have three locations. They serve 320 women a year through their three residential locations, 65 units of community-based housing, and they have support services, mental health, you know, general health services, job placement. The day that I was there, this woman was helping her fill out a job application to get a job. And, you know, it's just every aspect is sort of, you know, supported and you know, they're helped along there. But this woman in particular showed me her apartment, and I'll never forget it. And this is a story I always share. It was this, you know, apartment half the size of my bedroom. We walk in and she goes, "This is my home." And the look on her face, and she was just so proud. And she said, "This is mine. This is where I live." And I was like, wow, how do I get this for everybody who needs a home? How do I make this happen? Like, how do I, what do you need? And, you know, I've taken people, I took some young girls, we volunteered one day, we served dinner for them. And anybody who comes in contact with Deborah's Place, immediately, they're just like, how do I help? What can I do? What can I do? This is amazing. This is amazing. And so it's all about empowering women, which is a huge platform of mine, but it's from just even the basic level of giving somebody a home.
Yeah, right.
You know,
it's like basic. Basic stuff that we some people take for granted. Yeah.
No, and I think we tend to think of like, how do I give back? And we're just like, okay, I don't have the time. I don't have, you know, I've got kids and I got a job and I've got all this stuff to do. How do I give back? And, you know, if you go to the website for Deborah's Place, it's deborahsplace.org, and you look at their wish list, and it's the basic items that the women need, and it's so painfully simple. Like, it just breaks your heart. Like, things that you walk into your bathroom right now and you look around and it's toothpaste, you know, it's mouthwash, it's a toothbrush, it's body wash. You know, you go into your closet and you find laundry detergent, things that you just sort of like go to the CVS and like, okay, yeah, no big deal. You know, for these women, it's everything, because they get support through their SNAP benefits, but they can't, you know, their income is limited if they do have a job or, you know, what sort of, you know, assistance they get. But, you know, they need help, like with other things like buying toilet paper, you know. And so
where for you, you know, where do you think it comes from? Where do you think, I mean, you said at the beginning, you know, life has been good to you. But, I mean, it's more ingrained than that. I mean, this idea that you want to give back. I mean, what, does it come from your upbringing? Does it come from, is there a certain point in your life where it's a light bulb went off and said, you know what, I'm looking for more fulfillment?
You know what it is? It's sort of like, I've talked to other women about this. It's sort of like this imposter syndrome. They're going to figure out that I really don't know what I'm doing, and it's going to all be taken away from me. You know, I'm going to wake up one day and it's sort of like, what was that movie with Nicolas Cage, Family Man? Like, yeah, I'm going to wake up and I'm like, yeah, my Gold Coast apartment's gone. Like, what were you thinking? You know, it's just, everything is just so fleeting. It really is. And the things that matter, you know, and it's sort of like, I don't know, maybe it's just turning 40. It's sort of like, what will you be remembered for? And it's not going to be the accolades. It's not going to be the wine. It's not going to be the restaurants. It's, Were you a good person? Did you help somebody? You know, were you loved and did you love? And so it's just about sort of like those tangible things that really do matter at the end of the day. And I think our country as a whole is, you know, there's this sort of like feeling of, I need to do something.
Yeah.
You know, like people just feel sort of helpless. And I think when you feel helpless, the best thing to do is become helpful.
Well, I mean, we just had the Janae Myers, who's the CEO at Chicago Cares, on, and we kind of had this hypothetical question that was like, what if it was not unlike the military draft? What if there was a volunteer draft? What if volunteering was mandatory? I know there's a joke in there, but the concept being, you know, everybody had to do something to give back to where they live, their community, clean up a park or anything of that nature. And what would the world look like? And I know it's not going to happen, but it had more to do with us sort of having this introspective conversation about what would that do for the people who don't feel inspired to do things, but also this concept of, you know, what would that do for all of us to feel like we're a part of something and we are more fulfilled as human beings?
Well, because giving feels good. I mean, it really does feel good. I mean, when you look in somebody's eyes that you've helped, and, you know, whether it's big or small, whatever it is, you know, you get so much more in return. And every time I do something for Deborah's Place or do something for a charity, there's a little bounce in my step, you know, like I did something good. Yay.
Do you think that might come from also being in the industry, being in the culinary industry? I mean, there's so much that goes around sort of like food and serving and the table and this idea of almost, you know, being able to give sustenance to someone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find that, you know, it's also sometimes it can run away quite easily for you lose perspective about what's important. You know, it can just, you know, the material things can become like, you know, you just lose sight of what matters. And when you ground yourself with charitable work, it gives you perspective. When you see in comparison to somebody else, you know, how truly blessed you are, it makes you appreciate all that is around you. And I'm not even talking about like the nice things and the jewelry and the cars and anything like that. But I think it's something just as basic as if you look and you know that somebody loves you and is cares for, like if you don't show up one day, they're going to, you know, like, hey, you know, like, where are you? You know, and for some people, you know, that sense that they just are alone, they feel alone. And it's that soul sucking feeling of there's nobody in this world that cares for me. And I don't think there's a single human being that needs to suffer from that, you know, that sense of loneliness.
I always love having you on because we always come on with this idea that we're going to talk about food and we're going to do whatever. And it delves into something much deeper, and I love it. Alpana Singh in studio, of course, the restaurateur here in Chicago and television personality and sommelier. She's been in Chicago for years now. Restaurants like The Boarding House, Seven Lions, Evanston's, Terra and Vine. She is the honorary chair for the upcoming Opening Doors Benefit, a fundraiser for Deborah's Place, Chicago's oldest and largest provider of housing for women experiencing homelessness. The event is on May 11th.
May 11th. So tickets are available for the event. But even if you can't make it, please go to the website and take a look at the wish list items. You know, and like I said, you know, a pair of socks can make somebody's days.
You know, I guess, as you think about, I mean, even the concept, as we talked about this, that idea of aloneness and even the idea of giving back. I mean, you were talking about these, we're really sort of touching on these ideas of what makes us human.
Yeah, we're vulnerable.
I mean, for you as someone who, I mean, I just think about, you know, all of the things that you've done in your career, from even the work that you've done as a sommelier, starting up. I forget the stat every time, but it's the youngest sommelier. And
I was the youngest woman to pass the exam. Yeah.
To your work, you know, on Check Please, to the restaurateur, the work that you've done in the restaurants. I mean, you have made an impact.
Thank you.
In Chicago.
But
I mean,
none of that matters if I'm not a good human and I'm not giving back and I'm not fulfilling the purpose of why I'm here. Then none of that matters. You know, I mean, that's just like superficial stuff. You know, I mean, it's nice. Don't get me wrong. But the work that I do to help another human being, that's what matters. You know, if a young woman sees that I pass the exam, that inspires her to take the test and take that leap and to believe in herself. That's what the accolade is there for.
For you, I mean, you as you said at the beginning, I mean, you're looking for charitable opportunities for empowerment for women.
Correct.
Why is that important to you? Why is it important, as you just mentioned right there, to inspire a younger sommelier, a woman, to take the test because of your success at such a young age? What is it about, from a gender standpoint, that attracts you to empowering women.
Because we need to move the needle. We need to have, you know, more women at the table in government. We need to have more women making decisions that affect us. I'm sick and tired of looking at these photographs of men legislating our bodies. I'm sick and tired of it. I'm sick and tired of, you know, an all-male agenda making decisions for us. But it's up to us women to go, you know what? I'm not going to lean in. That's too polite. I'm going to jump in. You know, and I'm going to raise my hand. I'm going to go for that raise. I'm going to go for that promotion. I'm going to go for that job. We got to move that 3% number. You know, we just need women to show up and to believe in themselves. And, you know, like I said, it's just, it's about like women supporting women, but also just women believing in themselves of like, I belong here. You know, I can do this. I am going to do this, you know? And so we just, you know, we got to change the numbers. We have to change all the statistics. You know, what is that? There are more men named William, Robert, and John sitting on boards than women, you know, all together. You know, it's like Senator.
It's a terrible stat, by the way.
Senator Warren said it best. If you're not at the table, that means you're on the menu.
Right.
You know, if you don't have a seat at the table, that means you're on the menu.
You know, I think about, you know, all the things that you're advocating for, and it is interesting because once again, I mean, you have had the luxury of, I mean, you are in a field that's pretty male dominated. I think of chefs and sommeliers, and I mean, we get into television, things of that nature. Do you feel when you put it all together, do you feel that you've experienced some of the same things that you're sort of advocating for women to jump in? I mean, the idea of sort of being left behind or being discriminated against about being a woman in some of these areas? Because you've had great relationships with some of the people you've worked
with. Actually, the majority of my mentors are men. You know, I always say the best feminists are men. But really, it's not about, like it's not the gender bias against women. It's the women. It's women believing a certain rhetoric about themselves. I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified enough. I don't deserve a seat at that table. You know, like they look at their resume and they don't go for the job. You know, there was reading a Crane's op-ed piece this morning by Claire Bushley. I think that's right, Bushley. But she said that she called this woman because she's like, women are not quoted in articles. So she called her as a financial analyst and the woman did not return her phone call. She, after three attempts, she said she gave up. You know, she's just like, you know, she's like, I want to quote you, but you need to call me back. So maybe she thought, well, what do I have to say? What do I have to add to the conversation? It's like, well, if a Crane's reporter is calling you, you've got plenty to
offer. Are those some of the emotions that are prevalent in the restaurant industry? I mean, do women have a harder time sort of breaking through because of not necessarily a gender bias necessarily, but the idea that they don't believe that they could be head chefs or they could be restaurant owners, that they can be master sommeliers?
I think that has something to do with it and part of it. I mean, I look at myself and, you know, I mean, I went for the exam, you know, I decided to go take it, but perhaps there was that, you know, I had that self-doubt, like any human has self-doubt of like, oh, okay. But I just see it with some of my employees sometimes of like, hey, you should do this. You know, because all it takes is that tap, you know, that tap of somebody believing in you. But I can't make you believe in yourself. You know, so if somebody's listening tonight and they're on the fence about, you know, a career change or something they want to do, or maybe they're thinking about a promotion and they're like waffling back and forth, you know, just go do it. You show up to bat, you know, you just swing. You know, what was that, Michael Jordan? You miss all the shots you don't take. You know,
you're right? A quote factory. I love it tonight. You're killing it. I love it. Albina Singh in studio. Of course, her restaurant's The Boarding House, Seven Lions, Evanston's Terra and Vine. She is the honorary chair for the upcoming Opening Doors benefit. It's a fundraiser for Deborah's Place, Chicago's oldest provider of supportive housing for women experiencing homelessness. The event is May 11th. Where's it at?
It's at Venue One.
Venue One.
Of course. It's going to be a great event. And actually, WGN's very own, I have it right down here. Sorry, Gaynor Hall Patterson of WGN. Yeah. She's going to be honored.
The TV side.
Yes, the TV side.
That's the primetime side. they always get the call, but that's great. Albina, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
And good luck with
the
event.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. Coming up tomorrow night, legendary photographer Art Shea, 95 years old, And he's got a new exhibit on Friday. One of the legendary photographers, Chicagoan. No, he's done so many great, great projects. Worked with Nelson Algren. Great photos of Elizabeth Taylor and Muhammad Ali. His work was the work that really sort of grabbed the attention and is on record, the historical record of the 1968 Democratic Convention. I mean, you look at Art Shea's work and you're like, no, I know that picture. So Art Shea will be in studio tomorrow. We'll talk with him about his amazing career. 95 years old, just had his birthday. Happy birthday, Art. All right. I got an issue, Pete. Before we get to the worst, I mean, this is kind of the worst, but it doesn't really relate. And I only bring it up on the show because I know for a fact that my wife, she really doesn't listen. It's a certain point, like, yeah. Enough of you. In the last couple days, because of the rain, you know, she texted me and she was like, oh my God, there's a spider web in the corner. There's a spider on the wall. You're going to have to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you can kill the spider. It's a not moving fast spider in the corner of the ceiling. And that morning, you know, she pointed it out. There was, and I had to get up on a chair and kill a spider. This was probably 3 or 4 days ago, right? And so, and then she had complained again that there was spider webs, like cobwebs, like kind of on our bedroom ceiling,
mm-hmm.
like over in the corner almost.
Mm.
I kind of above the bed, right? And so that day she's like, can you wash the sheets? And I'm like, why? We just washed them. She's like, I just wash them. I don't want to, you know, I don't know if they're setting up shop. I was just annoyed. I'm like, come on. Get over. First of all, it's a little spider and they're not like huge. And second of all, come on. You're being a little bit ridiculous. So last night, probably 5 in the morning, you know, I was sleeping. And I was tossing and turning as I'm known to do, especially with this job. You get to this point where, you know, you find yourself sort of wired from doing the show. And I felt like on my arm, like a little trickle. And I want to finish this story, but let's go to Rob. What do you got, Rob?
Yeah, Justin, real quick, two Chicago police officers wounded in a shooting in the Back of the Yards neighborhood tonight. It was near 43rd in Ashland. Now, a spokesperson for the police department says both officers were taken to the hospital in serious condition. This story continues to unfold. Of course, we will keep you up to date.
Oh, man. Never want to hear that in the city of Chicago. Police officers wounded in a shootout. Now, I'm back at the Yards. You never want to hear that. Thoughts and prayers with the family of the police officers in the city of Chicago, and we pray for the best, especially with the officers in serious condition. And like Rob said, we'll give you more as we know it here on 720 WGN. It kind of kills my story, too. I mean, that's such a, you know, tremendous story. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll reset it. We think, Pete, that's probably a better idea. All right, we'll take a break. 720 WGN. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to play the worst here on the download. Alexander Sarpalis and Soli Santos will be in studio from the Cates Ensemble. The stand-up comedians play at the Bookseller in Lincoln Square. They also play at the Laugh Factory over in Lakeview. We'll pay attention to the story that's developing right now. Two police officers shot in Chicago's South Side and Back of the Yards neighborhood, 43rd in Ashland. They were transported to the Stroger Hospital, serious condition. So we'll pay attention to that. We'll have some updates coming up at the 10 o'clock news. Right now, that's all that's been available from the Chicago Police Department. So we'll keep you up to speed on what comes out of that story. What I was saying about the spider situation is I did all that work. So just a really big recap. My wife was worried about some cobwebs because of the rain, some spiders. She's very afraid of spiders. You know, I had to get up on a chair and kill one.
Mm-hmm.
Then I found myself having to
clean.
Thank you. I had to clean the sheets because she was afraid that mm-hmm. they were just around.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole time I was just like, all right, enough. Last night, 5 o'clock in the morning, I feel a little tickle on my arm. I slap my arm, and I feel bug. Right? In the bed.
Oh.
Like that trickle was a spider going from my shoulder down to my elbow.
Oh.
And so I just, you know, grabbed it, and I was like, and then I felt squishy, you know? So I quietly, you know, acted like I was going to the bathroom, you know, and I got up, and I went to the bathroom, turned the light on, and I inspected, and it was that spider. It's a brave spider who actually went for human contact. But I was like, okay, so, you know, as I said at the beginning of this, my wife doesn't listen to radio, so I can talk about it, but I'm not going to tell her.
No, I woke
up and I was like, do I tell her that, oh my God, you know what happened last night? There was a spider on my arm.
No, you come home, you do that. Next day you come home, there's a for sale sign outside the house. You're going to have to move.
Exactly. Like, I was like, there's no win here, you know? So I just was like, I didn't say a word. And then like after, you know, she went to work this morning, I like, you know, undid the bedding to see if there was any sort of, you know, colony of spiders. There weren't, everything was fine. So I just think this little guy who was making those cobwebs was like, you know, he did a little arachnophobia, kind of like, you know, the web all the way down to see what was going down at bed level.
Could have been weak.
Right, maybe he fell.
Yeah, you know, terrible upper body strength, couldn't hold himself up.
Yeah, so I don't. So whatever I do not reveal the secret.
No.
That I was that, touched
you take
by
that
a bug.
To the grave.
You take that to the grave.
You take that to the grave.
So yeah, so I was a little bit, there was part of me that, you know, and I remember thinking in my head this morning after it happened, I'm like, God, I'm glad this didn't happen to her. It would have been a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and I'm a strong guy, right? It doesn't bother me. Who cares if it's a bug? I mean, people used to live in the middle of the forest in the 1800s, right? Bugs everywhere. That's just the way it is. For the next hour, every time there was like a small, like, I wouldn't even call it an itch. It was just like a...
yeah, it's the feeling that you're getting.
Just a feeling.
Yeah.
I was like up and checking.
Yeah, just like...
Yeah, I was doing everything. Yeah. I was squirming. I was moving around. I was shaking. I couldn't go back to bed. So for as much as in my head, I'm like, I'm glad this happened to me, Mr. Tough Guy. Like, I did not do well from the next hour.
Well, I have to give you credit for maintaining your composure as it happened. Because I think if that happened to me under the similar circumstances, I would have, you know, jumped up. Oh, my God. You know, like, started wiping off myself. Like, what kind of house are we living in? Yeah. This filth.
I know. That's the scary part. I agree with you. I feel like if this happened to my wife, we would have a different scenario. There'd be you know, we'd be bug bombing the second, the bedroom.
Your bed would be on the in the front.
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm trying to, like, I grew up in Wonder Lake, Illinois, and, you know, my parents live in the middle of the woods in Wisconsin now. I mean, little bugs are, like, part of dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you sit down, and the little ladybugs and the other bugs, they just, the apple, this little stink bugs, you know, just kind of hang out and watch. You're almost like family. So, to me, I've just gotten to a point where I'm like, I don't really care about that stuff.
We moved, and my previous place... I don't think in the 10 years that I was there, I saw more than 3 or 4 bugs. This new place, it's old, and I see a lot of bugs. And I kind of had to reconfigure my thinking, because I was like you. I was like, yeah, you know, I lived growing up, I lived with, you know, ants or whatever and things like that. Yeah, no problem. But then now I see them, and it bugs me, and I'm like, okay, it's only like one ant. You know, the termites aren't, like, taking down the whole place. But, yeah, like, I still kind of get freaked out about it, and I know I have to, like, kind of, like, yeah, reconfigure my brain into thinking, like, yeah, it's just a bug. It's not going to, it's no big deal.
The little, you know, 8 legs trickle on your elbow is the stuff nightmares are made of. You know, that's where you just, because you don't know what that is, and then you actually slap on the elbow and you feel the guts. You know, you're like, oh, that was a thing. Like, something was on me. And so that's that. You got to get over that a little bit.
Yeah,
we had last year. We have this, like, it's funny how we got better at it, because I don't think that the bugs, we had moths, like these little guys that were downstairs in our place, like in their basement area, and it drove me crazy. Like, I'd go down and I'd be like counting them, be like, there's one, there's 3. Oh God, what does that mean? 3? I'm gonna look this up on Google. What does 3 moths mean? Like, I was at that point. This year, I just let it go.
Yeah.
Like, I saw one. I'm like, you know what? You're not hurting anybody.
That's the way to do it.
And it didn't even register. Mm-hmm. It never did the count, never did anything. So I hope that spiders don't replace moss. That's what my fear is. That, like, at some point or another, there will be another sighting, and it'll be too close for comfort, and she'll be like, we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to do this, you know, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to call an exterminator over spiders.
No.
Who cares, right?
Yeah.
And it's rainy. Isn't that usually when spiders come out, when it's, like, super rainy?
Yeah. You would think. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
Looking for cover? I think they're just around.
Yeah, right. And, you know, my dad told me one time, and this is from, he told me and my 9-year-old son at the same time, and I feel like we both got a lesson. And I always explain it back to him. Anything outside is trying to get in. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's an intruder, like a criminal.
Telling that to your kid.
Right. Or it's an ant. They all want in your house.
Yeah.
Everything that's outside wants inside. So just remember that. That's the idea. So when you see a spider, it doesn't mean anything except for that thing wants to be inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's cozy in there. You know, you got heat, you got food, you got things like that. They want to be inside the house. So that's sort of been our lesson when we talk about, you know, bug. I wouldn't even call it infestation when I've only seen two spiders.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'd keep an eye out, though.
You would.
I'd be on watch.
Like all night, like infrared kind of thing?
No, but, you know.
I shouldn't sleep anymore?
Just monitor the situation.
Okay.
See if you have anything else kind of walking around.
Yeah.
Any other bugs? We got to make sure, do we know what kind of spider it is? Just like a house spider? I don't even know, like a garter spider? Do they have
I think it's a garter spider, yes.
You know, we make sure it's not venomous.
I don't think it's venomous because we don't live in that kind of area, right? I don't think there's a lot of spiders that are venomous in the Chicago area. And they're super, they're little guys. They're not, they don't see.
Is that a tarantula?
Yeah, it's not, they're not fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that kind of, you know what spider I don't like is the one that's like super compact. It's a little guy, but it's usually a black one. And it's just like, they just look like they got trouble. You know, where they're just like, you might be small, but you pack a punch. There's something about you that, like, you just got the look. You almost got, it's like a really, really mini tarantula. Like, I don't like those guys. This is like a, almost like a translucent brown kind of spider that's like an inch.
Yeah.
Right? Until, I'm telling you, the next time I'm going to see it, he's going to be like, you killed my brother. And then he's going to, like, do something spidery that I didn't know could happen. And, you know, like, there'll be a pool of spider web everywhere happening in front of me. And I'll be like, what is this thing? My wife was right. We should have sold this. 847 says, when we get this kind of rain, we get centipedes.
Ooh, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah. But that's more my speed of Wonder Lake, you know. And then 224 says, don't worry about the spiders. Spiders eat mosquitoes.
Oh.
So, and again, those mosquitoes going to want to get in. And they'll be in for a big surprise when my pet spiders are there. You know, so maybe we could use that as a guard. Maybe that's the problem. At a certain point in this world we live in, I need some sort of guard. And maybe the spiders are the guard so we don't get other bugs. Is there any bugs that kill cockroaches? I don't have cockroaches, but that would be a thing that I would not. That's the end game, so I don't want those.
Uh-huh.
So do spiders kill those? So then you're like, hey. Keep the spiders around.
So you're going to just live with some sort of insect.
Yeah. 708 says, any given time in your life you are within 5 feet of a spider. Oh, they're saying at any time in your life you're within 5 feet of a spider.
Yeah, isn't there that I don't know what the actual stat is, but it's like, you know, like they say that you eat in your lifetime, you eat while you're sleeping, like you swallow like dozens of spiders.
You hear that all the time. I love it. The textures are great. I didn't know we had such arachnophobe scientists in our listening area. 773 says the only reason the spider is inside is because there's food for it, which are smaller bugs, maybe the moss. No spiders in Chicago areas are harmful to humans. If you kill them, the other bugs will multiply.
So just let them live. So right. Like you, next time it's crawling on your body, just kind of wipe.
Hey, bud. Yeah, I'll do that thing where I get a piece of paper and like gently let it go to the piece of paper, and I'll bring it back to the wall.
Yeah.
Yes. 312 says, spiders are cool. They eat other bugs, roaches, etc. Leave them be.
So now, let's... Mm. Can you, you know, I know your wife's not listening, but can you replay this portion to her and now she will feel fine with spiders being, if she saw a spider, she doesn't have to call you or she doesn't have to panic. She just, right. Just let it go.
They're our friends.
They're helping.
I just wish that the spiders in the house could have a conversation with her in some form. It's like, hey, we just need to be on the same page. Let's get on the same page. There's something more nefarious in your walls. We're protecting you.
Mm-hmm.
312 says, remember this, red to black, friend of Jack, red to yellow, kill a fellow. 773 says, you've creeped me out big time. I'm sleeping with the light on tonight. Yeah. So it seems like there's some good stuff here. The small compact spiders are the ones that are symmetrical are definitely scary. Thousands of babies.
So when is too much? If they're good for certain things in your house, you can't have 1,000 running around.
Yeah, right. I mean, there has to be. Yeah. 312 says spiders, snakes, same difference. I think there's something there. I think you just nailed it right there in the sense of like, wait a second, who's giving us advice? Are people who just like, you just think to this 312's house and it's just snakes and spiders everywhere and they're like, no cockroaches here. 630 says, your harmless translucent brown spider was probably the deadly brown recluse spider. Just be glad we're not in Florida where every bug is 20 times larger. Jerry from Aurora. So the deadly brown recluse spider. Thanks for that.
That was the kind of spider that was...
That's what he's saying.
No.
The deadly recluse, brown recluse spider.
Because a previous texter said there's no venomous or poisonous or whatever spiders in Illinois. I think we're safe.
Yeah.
But again, you see those stories where, you know, you find an alligator in a toilet and things like that. I mean, things make their way here somehow.
Well, the good news is I think what I'm taking away from the listeners tonight is that if I keep the little spiders around, if an alligator does show up in the toilet, the spiders will protect me, right? That's the idea. If an Asian carp comes up the shower, the spiders will do some crazy spider stuff. And I come in and there's like a webbed Asian carp flopping, and I'll be like, good job, guys. You're my buddies. It says 312. I was a juror for a bug bite. There was a white one that is poisonous in our area. There are very definitely brown recluse spiders in Illinois.
Did somebody sue the spider? A juror.
Oh, I see. 224 says recluse like garages and cardboard boxes. All right. Everyone needs
this
to calm
like,
down.
This is like looking at WebMD when you have a cold.
The little spider in the corner is not venomous. Okay, I don't care what anyone says. He was on my show. I would be dead today. He'd be all over me, you know? Like, what was he waiting for? Maybe I just have awesome reflexes, and I got him.
Well, just monitor your health for the next couple of days if you start getting a fever.
Now, I don't even know why I brought it up. Like, all these people are just messing with us, man. They're messing with us in the way that now that I'm like, I have to go sleep in that bed. Like, I have to go back to the scene of the crime in a couple hours here. I don't need people being like, oh, maybe it's the deadly recluse spider of the brown deadly spider family.
Do you guys want a sobering thought?
Yes.
Think of all the things that are crawling all over us when we don't wake up.
Yeah, right? I know.
Have a good sleep.
All right, coming up and play the worst. I think we may have given nicely just a little pre-worst tonight, talking about spiders here in the download. Okay, coming up, we will play the worst. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. We'll pay attention to that story that is continuing. The officers in stable condition right now at Stroger Hospital. What a, I mean, a story where it seems as the details come out that you know, someone drove by and took shots at officers. A manhunt continues for the person who did it, 43rd and Ashland. I'm only looking at the screen at WGN TV, and it looks like they got the car, but the driver has exited, so they're chasing him down. Both of the officers once were in serious condition, now in stable condition at Stroger Hospital. So like I said, Rob will give us an update. He'll jump in. He'll give us an update on the story as it develops here in Chicago. So we will pay attention to that. We're going to play the worst now here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. That's what we're going to do tonight, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Always fun. Two stand-up comedians in studio tonight from the Cates Ensemble, Soli Santos, Alexandra Sarpalis. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
us. Of course, as part of the Cates Ensemble, which will be at the Laugh Factory this Thursday night at 8 o'clock. They also are part of Cates University, which is where they offer up classes. You can take classes with the Cates at thecates.org. Thanks for being here. Thanks. Good to see you guys again. I was looking. I grabbed a photo today, and the date on it was May 9th, 2016.
What?
That's when you guys were in
fantastic.
Last.
Weird.
So it's a year ago. How about
wow.
that? All right, so let's play the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. Why don't we kick it off the way we always kick it off with Pete Zimmerman. Pete always gets the first worst. What do you got, Pete?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you get these emails from Grubhub, but with no coupon attached, no discount, it's like, hey, it looks like it's raining in Chicago. I'm like, yeah, it is. Let me get my 10% off. And that's just a weather forecast.
It's just a forecast.
Yeah, no discount.
That is
only email me discounts.
Only email discounts. I can one-up that. And I think I told you this, Pete. When I went on vacation, I eliminated all of social media off my phone.
Oh.
So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of it. I decided to go. There's two ways to go. You can go document the heck out of your vacation or shut it down. So I shut it down, right? Facebook got really mad and started to email me
really?
All the time
oh, no.
telling me what I missed. And they started to, like, I got probably 15 to 20 emails from Facebook. I found out later, I didn't want to download the app and do everything again, but I found out later that I can disable them being able to send me emails. But at the time it was set up. So they'd say Soli Santos says, and it would do the first part of your sentence.
Uh-huh.
And then if I click through, it's like, we're not giving you the rest until you log in. Then it would say, you had 150 messages and 1,200 notifications in the last 4 days.
God.
And you're like, what? And it's all fake. It's all bogus.
That's so
yeah,
creepy.
Facebook was like, they cannot accept you leaving
that
their platform.
That sounds like a stalker
right.
X.
So it's needy. So
yes.
needy.
I mean, Facebook is, they're not unlike.
You can never, we can
yeah,
never.
They're like a gym. They're like, when, yeah. yeah. Right.
Wow. That's
you
true
probably
too.
Have to get a notarized
and
letter.
You
to
say
cancel.
That looking at me because you know I'm the personal trainer. Thank you very much. Ha ha ha.
You're just like, that's where Facebook stole their
yes,
marketing techniques from you.
Ingenious.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we start with you, Alexander? What do you got for the worst?
Some good stuff. Let's see here. Well, I commute a lot on the train.
Mm-hmm.
People with backpacks on the L. The worst. I actually made
just anybody with a backpack.
Yep. Uh-huh. Because yeah. they're always hitting me. I made a flow chart of that, actually. Like,
you made a flow chart?
Yeah. It's you start off with, like, are
like
you
a
wearing a backpack? Yes.
She made a flow
then
chart.
Then it's hitting me. If they answered no, do you have another bag? Yes. Then it's hitting me. If they say no and they're insisting on that, I go with, are you sure?
Yeah.
And that's usually a no.
Yeah,
and
we're going to have to get a picture of this
yeah.
flowchart and put it on Instagram.
Yes.
I agree with you. And I also would add an addendum to that, that anyone in overstuffed backpacks.
Yes.
Like that you
oh,
have
yeah.
so much stuff in there and you're not a high school kid.
Yeah.
You, that's the
what
worst.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Come on. You're just
your
going
volleyball
to
league is very important.
That's
very
right.
important.
312-981-7200. Soli, what do you got for the worst?
Well, the worst is when you go to your parents' house and they feed you a poisonous sandwich, but you don't realize that until 2 hours after the fact when you're facing the throne at your house, wondering what you did wrong to have deserved such type of unloving treatment.
I assume this is a personal story, right?
It's just random. This is just a random thing that I thought about. I was like, what could I say on the show tonight about the worst? And hey, what about this situation? When, you know, like you end up finding your body finding ways to expel the said sandwich in horrible, mean.
How?
Mean,
and nobody
horrible
else
ways.
Got sick. It was just you.
Nobody else. And then being expected to take your parents to the airport at 4 a.m.
I'm glad you got it off your chest. Like, I'm glad you've been sitting on that. You're like, I wish I had an outlet and you found it.
They got to go to Mexico and I got to live the weekend like I drank the water.
There it is. Soli Santos, Alexander Sarpalis in studio. They are members of the Kate Ensemble. All right, 312-981-7200. What we'll do, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get your texts. We'll get your calls. And we're playing the worst here on the download. Stay with us.
What's going down,
y'all? All right, we're playing the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200 in studio. Two members of the Kate Ensemble. Great ensemble of stand-up comedians here in Chicago. Soli Santos, Alexander Sarpalis in studio. The Kates, Thursday night at the Laugh Factory, 8 o'clock. Also teaching classes. You can get them at thekates.org. All right, let's go to some of these callers and texts. Let's start with text 773. The worst is pulling as close as you can in the bank drive-through lane and still having to open your car window, car door, unbuckling your seatbelt, and hanging half your body out of the car to reach the container to put your banking in. And I think that goes for any drive-through situation. This is banking, but I was just lamenting the concept of Walgreens prescriptions. It's the same thing where you just like you find yourself like you didn't get the you're half hanging out of your car, which for me I didn't put in park, so you still got the foot on the brake. Like it's a whole bit. It's just like it's a clown. It's a clown show. It really is.
And then they request things like ID. I'm like, really? Do you need that? I mean,
really?
I've gone to all this effort for some allergy medication.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I'm trying to scam you.
Over. Yeah.
Right. The minute they ask for an ID, you just rip out of there like, almost.
Yeah. Not going to get my Zyzol.
Not going to get mine.
Which all is right. Now over the counter. So hey, never mind.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Stephanie. Stephanie, what's the worst, Stephanie?
I cannot believe you. Uh-oh. A nice night's sleep I thought I was going to have. And all I heard was about the spider crawling. Thank you so very, very much.
I apologize, Stephanie. Thank you for the call.
Okay. Good
it's
night.
All right. It'll be okay. It's okay. You don't listen to everybody. Good night. Yeah, we were talking about spiders, and I had a spider crawl on me in the middle of the night last night. And
that's horrible.
It really is. It's horrible, but I think it's okay. I think it became worse by the people who text in telling me the difference, you know, worst case WebMD cases that could happen from a spider crawling on you. And I think that's what Stephanie's talking about. All right. 708 says, you know what's the worst? Camping.
Oh, amen. I hate camping.
I'm
hate
not
camping.
A fan either. I'm not.
Staunch anti-camper.
I'm a city girl.
Yeah.
I don't like camping either, but I feel like there's something to it. Right, I feel like it's not the. I feel like it's a nostalgia trip. Maybe I'm
yes.
not sure. Like I don't know if it'd be the worst if it all went well, but I guess that's the
yeah,
problem.
It
is like
does.
It doesn't always
it doesn't.
Go well. It always rains.
And as
it
long does. As there are mosquitoes, it never goes well. I don't care how sunny and beautiful it is outside.
You know who eats mosquitoes? Spiders.
Thanks for sharing.
I just found out. In
brown
the last
recluse
hour.
Spiders, or
no? Let's leave the species out of it. All right. 847 says when it takes an hour to get my freaky fast sandwich delivered and there's no cheese on it, which I paid extra for.
Dang.
I got a good one for you. This happened to me this weekend. We did Domino's Pizza, right? Nice place.
An American classic.
Classic. It got to the place, and there was no sauce on the pizza.
What?
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's exactly
hideous.
How I responded. I was like, what? What is that? How is there no sauce? And so it was downpour raining, and we had done a delivery. And the guy came on a bike, which I was like, oh, come on, man. It's ridiculous you made that choice. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to get in the car, and I'll go back to the Domino's and show him and get new pizza, right? We got in there, and she's like, she goes, well, that's what you ordered.
No.
We ordered it online. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, look. And she showed me the sticker. And the sticker says no sauce. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, did you ask for sauce on the app? I'm like, is that a thing? Doesn't it just come with sauce? Like, I guess there's a category that's like, do you want sauce? And I just skipped it. So, or no, or something went awry. And she then said, you know, sometimes we have problems with the apps that way. We'll make new ones. And I had to wait there for 15 minutes. But the point being, it was amazing that there's a thing on the app that's like, do you want sauce?
Do you want bread with your pizza?
Right.
Do you want a crust?
Do you want crust? Do you want cheese? I mean, that's probably all of it.
Would you like your pizza delivered in a cardboard box?
Yeah. It goes down the line. There's probably 15 categories I skip, like next, next, next.
And you definitely checked the bike box for the delivery, so that's good. Deliver on a bike.
I know, right? Let's go to Flip. Flip, what's the worst, Flip? Flip, you there?
Yeah.
What's
the
worst? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I usually when I moved into my house, mm-hmm. I had a broke down fence, but I had my garage redone and all that disturbance. Either way, I decided to continue. You know, I threw out my garbage, but I was going to go up to the bar, and I walked up to the bar. But either way, I walked through something that felt like a trampoline.
Yeah.
And it was not. It was a spider web. But I kind of backed out of it and got myself out. And I looked at the exit, you know, my gate where it used to be. Well, either way, I walked about a block and a half. And I walked into the bar. And I had to, you know, kind of relieve myself, you know, before I went into the bar.
Sure, as one does, sure.
Yeah. Either way, I went into the bathroom. And either way. Did what I had to do. I was looking up, staring up, as we usually do, and I seen something down, fall down. And I'm like, into the urinal. And I look down, and I'm like, ooh, my God. The back end, the ass end of the, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
The back end of the spider was at least 2.5-3 inches.
Was it on your head? Is that what happened? Or was
It rested on my stomach. Apparently, it was in October.
Oh, thanks. Oh man, I am glad that we've inspired.
The thing was just chilling on my stomach, underneath my coat because I don't zip my coat up. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Flip, thank you for
the bartender's like, what's going on? Why you? I'm like, go in there, check it out. And she went in there, and she came out screaming. But either way, for all you spider web, spider foe people, ortho, home,
it ends in an ad for an ortho. I appreciate it. Thanks, Flip. Thanks for calling in. I know, it's my bad. I started the worst with a 15-minute segment about spiders.
You're the worst.
That'll do it. I'm the worst. Tonight, I'm the worst. All right, the worst, 847 says, the worst is when your full-size sedan is in the shop and the loaner is a subcompact. I'm not a small guy, but the thing is like an overpowered go-kart. It's like real-life Mario Kart. Mm. You throw a little... turtle shells
yeah,
out.
Banana peels.
Yeah, banana peels, things like that. 724 says, the worst is going through the drive-thru and no money comes out of the ATM. Had to wait 3 weeks for the bank to refund my money. And they never even said sorry.
They won't. Those bastards.
SOBs.
Yeah. All right. So 312-981-7200. We got much more to go here on The Worst. Soli Santos, Alexander Sarpalis in studio. We will take a break, we'll come back, and we will continue with the second half of The Worst here on The Download. Stay with us. All right, we're playing The Worst here on The Download, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of texts, some people on the line waiting. Alexander Sarpalis and Soli Santos in studio, two members of the Kate's great stand-up comedian ensemble. In Chicago, they are going to be on stage at the Laugh Factory on Thursday at 8 o'clock. They also teach classes, thekates.org, for more information. All right, so let's go back to you guys before we go to the text. We're still looking for winners. We got prizes to give away. I've got tickets to Mary Poppins.
Oh.
I've got complimentary registration for two riders to the MB Bike to Drive.
Oh, what? That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It costs money to Bike to Drive.
I didn't realize that.
And, of course, a Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
What? Oh, heck yes. Heck yes.
That's pizza with sauce.
Rick just came in, of course, one of our pals here, and he said, you know what's the worst? A Chicago radio host who admits he eats Domino's, and he has the app.
Oh, you know what? I almost said something, too. I did. I was
come on,
like, well,
snobs.
I mean,
it
James
was Beard
Domino's.
Mm. What do you expect? Mm. I don't know. It's a neighborhood joint, right?
Yeah. Mm. That's what I recommend.
This is
to
what,
all my friends
this is
in
what
town.
Life is like when you have a 9-year-old. Because a 9-year-old eats cheese pizza. And so then you're like, yeah, you know what? We could. There's all sorts of different kinds, but the Domino's kind of works in the way that you're like, all right, we'll get a cheese pizza.
It's its own special
blame
thing.
Blame it on your kid.
Always.
Blame it on your kid.
All right, let's go back to you guys. Alexander, what do you got for the worst?
Okay, so I really am frustrated with the pronunciation of words changing suddenly.
Oh,
yeah.
Ensemble.
Appalachian changed to Appalachian recently.
So interesting. We had a whole segment, great segment with the chef from Big Jones in Andersonville.
Oh, great.
And they
place.
Were doing Appalachian food.
What the what? And why
didn't
I
had a hard time.
Me?
I had a hard time. I was like, Appalachian, but what I did was I listened. He was on WGN TV and I watched a thing and there was another interview that and they kept saying Appalachian.
What is that? And then plantain has switched to plantain. And I will not change.
I wouldn't change. That's mm-mm. not even. That's
no,
not even
putting
proper.
Putting my foot down.
They're never, making the I never. Silent.
Yeah, I don't know. Plantain.
How? Who?
Plantain.
What?
Plantain.
No. Right.
You sure it's just not like one of your Grabowski neighbors is like?
Oh,
I just
I
had
wish.
One of those plantains.
No, originally I did think that, and I was like, oh, it's a plantain, and then. It was many other people. I'm like, I'm...
It's me.
I'm the Rube.
I'm the Grabowski.
Yeah. Right. Darn it.
All right, Soli, what do you got for the worst?
Well, it's not as it's not as fancy as Alex's.
A super highbrow over here.
Yeah. But the worst is when you leave your house thinking you're having a really good hair day, and then you get into regular proper lighting and realize you look like you just woke up.
Do you leave the house? Are you a woman who will spend a lot of time on her hair? Or are you like, it looks good, I'm gone?
No, because I don't have that kind of time. And even when I do spend that kind of time, it looks like I didn't spend that kind of time.
Right, right.
So then it just ends up in a ponytail.
You should just spend the money and do what I see where the blow dry, where you go to the blow dry bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are not as good as they say they are.
I can do that myself, mm-hmm. but we backtrack to the lack of time.
I'm just trying to help you out.
I appreciate it.
I'm giving
this
you
is,
options.
The totally. Advice is coming yeah. from a man who is bald.
Let me mansplain. Let me bald-splain.
Let's explain this.
Let me bald-splain what so you should visual. Do with your hair, Soli.
All right. I'm glad you understand with that long, luscious mane you have going there.
I just pay attention. I pay attention to trends, Soli. All right, 312-981-7200. 214 says, you know what's the worst? When you stick fat bread in the toaster and it gets stuck and it breaks and burns.
Oh, that yeah. is the worst.
That's
you
a
know
very
what?
Good description
that
of it.
That is a very good description of it. Oh, yeah. I just got flashbacks.
All right, so here's one. I had this happen. Okay, this is a long one. Hold on. The worst is, okay, so there's a lot going on here. 708 says, the worst is the middle of winter when it's below zero and you're at an event at a banquet hall and you're walking through the parking lot and in heels and it's black ice and you slip and fall and you smack your head and you have to go in and pretend like nothing ever happened.
What?
In the meantime, you got a knot on your head and it's throbbing and you're not sure if you have a concussion or not. I had this happen to me 2 winters ago, and I own my own company. I had to go in and put a smile on my face and act like nothing happened and be the boss.
Oh.
I still have the scar tissue. It was so bad that I actually went to the ER the next day and had a CAT scan done. But like I said, I had to go in and act like everything was fine.
Oh.
That's like right out of a movie. I'm okay. We're going to make this happen. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh.
That might be a winner. That's a good. That's a
that is very descriptive.
And if I had a job that required me to wear heels, that would probably happen.
That
to
would
me.
Be the. Yeah. That would
oh,
be.
Oh yeah.
All right, let's go into Dave. Dave, what's the worst, Dave?
Hey, when your drawstring in your sweatpants gets stuck inside the pants,
yeah, that's a winner.
And you try to fish the end out, or you try to fit it through.
Yep.
Or you try like a paper clip, bend it backwards, but that gets stuck in between.
And you never want to give up on it. You don't want to, because you could easily just you could just be impulsive and be like, I'm pulling the whole thing out.
Well, you know, there's like these mysterious layers of elastic, and you don't know which side they're on. And sometimes the paper clip, the sharp end, pokes through it and brings it through that layer. And by the time you're done, the whole thing is torn to shreds.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. I like that one, Dave. Thank you for that.
Okay. Take care.
Sorry to mean that. Bonnie, what's the worst, Bonnie?
Oh, okay. You guys are so funny tonight. I just got to tell you, you made my day. And I have to tell you, I kind of consider myself a nature freak. I'm walking my dog today with a friend, with her dog. I come across, these beautiful little robin blue eggs apparently fell out of a nest. So what am I going to do with the egg? Okay, I'm going to take it home and see if it'll hatch, okay? So I put it in my pocket. I get upstairs. I put it in warm water, gently wash it off, put it in a little nest that I had in my creative craft box that I had with some Spanish moss and making it all comfortable.
So you made a whole
and
nest?
Everything. Well, I didn't make the nest. No, it was already made.
Oh, okay.
I had a box with crafts in it, so it's already made. But I'm making it as comfortable as possible. I turned on the heating pad and turned it up all the way, and I thought, okay, here, we're going to warm it up. I'm keeping an eye, close eye on it, and about an hour later on, I go to sit down on the couch, and my hand went in on top of the egg and smashed it.
Oh, no!
Wait, it was the tiniest egg. There wasn't a little bird inside. It was just an egg yolk. And I was just sitting here while I'm waiting thinking, it could have been a little scrambled eggs for your little tiny spiders.
nice callback, yeah. That is good. Yeah,
but anyway, but so much for Mother Nature. Holy cow, man. I just guess I'm not the sort. But
well, that's okay. Don't beat yourself up.
You might get a chuckle out of it.
That's a good one, Bonnie. I appreciate that. That's a strong one because that's good. That's strong. That's all the intention.
She crafted an incubator. It's amazing.
She crafted an incubator.
And then she murdered it. Murdered it.
815 says, falling down the stairs, sleepwalking, ending up having to get staples in your head.
Oh,
yikes.
Nice.
Jeez. Mm. 312, the worst is when you get all busy with a girl and you stroke her hair and then her ponytail comes off. Come on.
That's so alarming.
I feel like that's
I hate
fake.
When that happens with the guys I'm dating. That's what I hate. It's worse.
Oh, that's spooky.
224 says, the worst is when you go into work and they tell you only have 2 weeks left and then your job is done.
Yeah.
The 224 says the worst is when people are so scared of snakes. And a great little picture here of her son holding a snake. And she said those people would probably say the worst is people like me trying to show pictures of snakes.
Okay. Yeah.
Go. 815, using a kid's slide to climb a tree, falling down and smacking your face, then having your bottom teeth go through your face.
Now
you're at the OR getting stitches.
No.
Wow. What the?
It sounded like a promising America's Funniest Home Video.
Right. Once done, while parents are paying for the bill, you play with a string on your face and pull the stitches right out, have to do it all over again. I'm getting a ton of injury
That's gross.
Tonight. You know how, see how this happens? Like a trend. You talk spiders, it's all about insects. And then you start talking about injuries, and it's just off to the races.
You're resonating with people. You're reaching out, connecting.
I think they're going,
that's why this show is a success.
I think they're going, oh, I once bumped my head. That is the worst. The worst is, this is 773, the worst is being on a date with a boring person who has nothing to say but be boring. It's like being in the room with a dead fly.
I've dated a lot of dead flies. Not as bad as...
Not as bad as you think, right.
You think, yeah.
All right. It's 224. The worst is losing 7 games in a row in solitaire on my phone. Come on.
What?
That is kind of the point of that game is to win, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
7. That's a lot.
Yeah. 518, and then we'll take a break here. The worst is when you go in to kiss your aunt on the cheek, but she suddenly moves the wrong way and you hit her lips.
I think that's with any relative.
That's anybody.
That's an old, creepy old man. Anybody, yes.
312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the worst, and we'll give away the prizes. You still got time to get in. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Soli Santos, Alexander Sarpalis in studio tonight. They are members of the Cates, the comedy stand-up comedy ensemble. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. You can see the Cates this Thursday night at the Laugh Factory over there on Belmont and Broadway. It'll be at 8 o'clock, and they also do classes, and you can find out all the other information at thecates.org. All right, let's continue here as we get ready to wrap up. We've got 3 that we like. But you know what? It could be stolen right at the end. It's kind of like Family Feud where you're like, you could steal it.
And they did.
And they did. Sometimes they do. I watch a lot of Family Feud.
Me too.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And it's starting, the way that the Game Show Network does Family Feud, they just run them back to back to back to back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't produce it that way. Meaning when Steve Harvey and the Family Feud do it, they have the family right there again. So you could tell like 10 minutes later, they just started another episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're wearing the same clothes or the family's the same. And you're like, yeah, that works if you can spread them out. But when they're right next to each other, boom to boom, you're like, all right. You know what? I'm seeing too much of how the Family Feud operates. I don't like this. The worst is going camping for your 1 week vacation only to be eaten alive by mosquitoes. Yes.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. The worst, landlord comes in to fit the light. Okay. Wow. Listen to this. Oh God, this is terrible. 773. The landlord comes in to fix the light fixture. Rather than get a ladder, he steps on the top of the closed toilet seat.
Oh no.
Then on top of the sink rips out from the wall.
No.
And he catches his fall and breaks the cover of the toilet tank.
Perfect.
Now he's got to fix all of that too.
Yeah, I know. That'd be the worst. 312. The worst is when you go in for a popsicle on a hot day and all they have is grape.
Oh.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
773. You know, it's the worst. Glitter on kids' art projects. Absolutely.
It's forever.
312. The worst are those tiny, titty, itty, bitty, teeny, weeny, tiny Coke cans. 2 man gulps, and that's it. The worst. There it is. What else do we have? And then we have a bunch of people coming in here. Let's go to, is it Jose? Jose, what's the worst, Jose?
Hey, thank you. My worst was a few years ago, I'm driving behind a semi-trailer, and something shot out from its back wheel, and it looked like a boulder, so I just kind of closed my eyes and pray for the best. It turned out that it ran over a pigeon, and the pigeon landed on my windshield with a thud with the wings spread out like the American Eagle.
Oh, no.
And I did the worst thing you could possibly do. I turned my wipers on.
I knew he was going to say that. I knew he was going to say that.
And it's just doing this little dance back and forth, and I'm mesmerized by it. I almost rear-ended the truck that stopped in front of me. So I pulled over and jumped around looking for a branch I could break off, and I had to suffer the indignity of people laughing at me as I'm trying to pick this thing off my windshield.
That's great. That's awesome.
That is great. Oh, and I would have been one of those people laughing.
Jose, that's a great one, man. Thanks
I would have laughed too.
That was great. That was great. All right. That's a strong one, right?
Yeah. That is a strong one.
815 says the worst is going to a job interview and realizing your shoes don't match.
Oh, aww. Nice. It's beautiful.
773 says a porta potty with no toilet paper.
Oh,
ew.
How about any bathroom with no public restroom?
I hate to say it because I feel like, you know, I get a little cynical sometimes. And I'm like, that shows up, no toilet paper. Shows up on every the worst.
Really?
Every Tuesday night, somebody, and it's not the same one. It's just people going, it's the worst, prepared. No toilet paper. I'm like, that's universal.
Yeah.
We understand that. Like, at a certain point, that's not the worst anymore.
Just bring
we
some tissues with you.
Yeah, right?
And be prepared.
There's different levels of being graphic.
Are you saying that that goes in the category of the obvious worst? No oxygen. The worst.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Suffocating.
Yeah.
The worst.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
The worst.
I hate when that happens.
You don't win a free pizza gift certificate for suffocating. Right. Okay. That's, yeah, right.
Probably wouldn't need one at that point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what kind of pizza you like.
You'd be unconscious. I don't know.
Probably without sauce.
Or dead.
Could be. All right, here we go. We got the top three. We, of course, got the Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Number two is going to get you a pair of tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins, now playing through May 28th at the Mercury Theater, Chicago. Bring the whole family, spend a jolly holiday with Mary Poppins and an irresistible cast of characters. Tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com or call 773-325-1700. First place is going to get you complimentary registration for two riders at MB Bike the Drive on Sunday, May 28th. Kick off the summer and enjoy almost 5 hours of car-free riding on Lakeshore Drive. Proceeds benefit the nonprofit Active Transportation Alliance. Register at mbbikethedrive.org. All right, let's get to it then. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm gonna make a decision. I'm going to say Jose's pigeon story is going to come in at number three. So Jose, you're going to get yourself a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. So congratulations on that. Second place tonight is going to go to Bonnie. Bonnie with her egg story of where she...
animal murders is the theme for the winners tonight. Animal murders.
I don't think that's murder.
It's accidental. It's accidental.
And you know, it wasn't a fully fledged...
It was a tiny scrambled egg is what it was.
Barely. Yeah. But anyway, the idea that she found a robin's egg, she took it, brought it in the house, put it in a makeshift nest.
She loved it too
much. Heated it up.
Yes.
I want to make it clear, incubated it. And then when she sat down on the couch to look, her arms swung over and she crushed it. That's like right out of a sitcom. That's a good little bit. So, Bonnie, you're going to get the tickets to Mary Poppins. So that's coming up. So let's go to our number one tonight. The winner tonight, it's a simple problem. We all have it. And I think that Dave illustrated his point and talked about the problems that go along with the drawstring string coming out of the sweatpants. Dave is the winner tonight. He's going to get the tickets for two riders. Dave, you know what? Hopefully this makes up for the torment that is the drawstring.
What exactly is the prize? Do I ride in this race?
If you want to, you can get complimentary registration. So you get to go Bike the Drive without having to pay for it.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it that day.
Well, all right. We could talk to Pete about this. Okay. You figure that out. We can maybe get your pizza instead. But
that would be good. That, all right. That Lou Malnati's would be perfect.
Great. I love it. I love the bartering for the prizes on air. But Dave, congratulations, and I hope you do get the drawstring out of the sweatpants, because that's something that
well,
we've
I'm
all
just
experienced.
Walking around with them with one hand on them, holding them up.
You know? There you go. All right, thanks, Dave. Dave wins whatever he wants. I mean, at this point, he's
the worst is when the first prize winner doesn't want the prize.
Barters, more importantly. What else is there?
Well, I'll go for that pizza. That pizza sounds delicious. Yeah. The other one sounds like a lot of work.
It's not the treasure chest in the front of the fourth grade class. What else you got? Was there erasers in there? Can I get a...
There was a lollipop I had my eye on.
Sugar-free candy? Alexandra Sarpalis, Soli Santos, members of the Cates, thank you guys for coming in, being a part. And let's do this again, hopefully not 1 year in its space, right? Yeah. But thanks, and have a great show on Thursday, guys.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
That's going to do it tonight. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN, Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Tomorrow night, Art Shea, the legendary photographer, just turned 95 years old, got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and we'll talk to him about his new exhibit here in the Gold Coast. So we'll talk with him coming up tomorrow. Coming up next, Patty Vasquez. But before we do that, let's get an update on tonight's news, including the Chicago police shooting of two officers in the back of the Yards neighborhood. We'll get an update on that.